Foreword: The Road to Bio. On August 31st, 1992, 21-year-old Nigel Walker arrived in New York City from Studham, a Bedfordshire UK village whose population typically hovers just above 1,500. He had won a painting competition while at university in London, the award for which was a free semester at the Fashion Institute of Technology as part of a student exchange programme. Navigating the streets of Midtown Manhattan on the way to FIT, Nigel was wide-eyed, eager, and contrary to what one who knows the unbounded visionary today might believe, a little intimidated. In 1992, the US Census Bureau reported 1.486 million people living in New York City's most densely populated borough. The magnitude of the city could be quite overwhelming for somebody from a small village, Nigel said. While it may be the slightest inaccuracy to say that Nigel hit the ground at full speed the moment he touched down in NYC, the ground he has since covered well makes up for any early trepidation as he got his bearings, which did not take long. When it came time to choose a subject for his senior dissertation, an undertaking most people see as one of life's greatest challenges in itself, Nigel decided to take it a step further, with a cross-country journey in the name of America's youth. I was alarmed by the amount of advertising that was being directed at children from cigarette corporations, he said. So I made it my objective to write my dissertation on cigarette advertising targeting juveniles via billboards in major cities and along highways. Prepared for the journey of a lifetime, Nigel found a rental car company with a one-way programme well-suited for his upcoming endeavour and hit the road, making it as far as the village of Tuckahoe, New York, where he was met with the first of many roadblocks that would define his journey, both personally and professionally. In the US, one must be 25 years of age to rent a car. "I'd just turned 21," Nigel recalled. 21 and 4 weeks, so that was the end of that journey. But for anyone who knows Nigel, the perceived end of one journey is really just a detour, usually to something much larger. In this instance, Nigel pushed forward on his dissertation, documenting youth-targeted cigarette advertising via billboards and convenience stores in and around New York City. The big idea would be shelved for a period of time, 25 years to be exact, and revisited from the very different perspective of someone slightly older, worlds wiser, and more driven than ever. That's nice. A science agency. On May 15, 1995, less than 2 years after graduating college, Nigel founded That's Nice, a New York City-based strategic marketing agency that has evolved over time to serve companies exclusively in life and materials sciences. Now in its 22nd year, That's Nice has supported over 500 companies across a range of industry sectors, with a large portion of its client base comprised of pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical contract service organisations, CROs and CDMOs, as well as those specialising in intermediates, excipients and equipment. While the evolution of That's Nice into a life science agency could be explained through decades of research, strategy and experience, it's no surprise that Nigel and his team ended up in this capacity, supporting clients involved in arguably the most time, labour and cost-intensive process that exists in the modern world, drug discovery and development. According to Nice Insight, the research arm of That's Nice, it is estimated that drug development can take an average of 14 years to complete post-discovery, which in itself can take several years. Drug development can be tremendously arduous, time-consuming and expensive, with no guarantee of any revenue at the end of it, said Nigel. It only takes the bravest of companies to go down this journey. The Road to Bio, an epic journey. Recognising that some of the greatest bio breakthroughs have come as a result of overcoming adversity, The Road to Bio was born, a 19-state journey from Boston to San Diego for the Bio International Convention, the biotechnology innovation organization's largest annual event, and the largest biotech event in the world, referred to in industry circles as simply Bio. The convention brings together leading biotech and pharma companies, top 20 CROs and CDMOs, academic institutions, major research labs and government agencies, and leading consultants and service companies. In 2017, Bio hosted over 16,000 attendees from more than 5,000 companies. It's always a happy time when everyone traverses and travels to Bio, said Nigel. Also, the San Diego Convention Center is, in my opinion, the best convention center in the United States. From the start, the road to Bio was about breakthroughs, breaking through the cost, risk, and regulatory pressures on the road to pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical development. Over 22 years, That's Nice has supported clients through some of their greatest discoveries along the development pathway, which have, in many cases, translated into some of the industry's most significant breakthroughs. But as has been seen time and time again, the road to commercial success can be fraught with adversity, requiring perfect alignment of the right strategy, technology, and team to see it to a successful conclusion, and, above all, a partner that is willing to test the boundaries of what's possible in order to move it forward. Mirroring the development pathway, a speed to market campaign. Drug development should not be compared to a road trip across the country. This, Nigel proclaimed, was not about engineering far too literal comparisons between speed to market and soaring odometer readings, nor would the copywriting team be coming up with strained metaphors for people as molecules. But this was an effort done in solidarity as an illustration of what wins through adversity. And with speed so often at the juncture of commercial success and costly failure in drug development, the means of transportation needed to reflect as much. Vehicle selection. The Lamborghini. The That's Nice signature Lamborghini had made its debut in April 2015 at Interphex, an annual pharmaceutical, biotechnology and medical device development and manufacturing conference, and has since served as part of the agency's bold exhibit presence, as well as the setting for countless thought leadership interviews with various industry experts. Over the years, the car has evolved from a chrome-wrapped Aventador for the agency's 20th anniversary campaign in 2015 to a bright yellow Aventador Pirelli Roadster as part of its Glittering Insights campaign in 2016 to today's glitter-wrapped Aventador Super Veloce SV Roadster that traversed the road to Bio. With the new SV due to hit the market in February 2017, the idea of taking the thought leadership platform on the road to visit customers while en route to Bio began to take form. Known for its 217 mph top speed and aeronautics-inspired exterior, and less for fuel economy, comfort and safety, the car was part inspiration, part challenge. "We first had to question whether this was actually possible," said Nigel. "Will the car hold up? Is it possible to drive 10 to 14 hours a day in a relatively small sports car that is not made for comfort? How does one track and negotiate the different road conditions and topographic landscapes across the US? Vehicle selection. The support RV. To say that the Lamborghini holds two people is a stretch, and to claim that it does so comfortably is arguably plain false. Add to that the fact that the roof, when detached, is stored in the trunk, which eliminates space for a duffel bag, let alone 2 weeks' worth of luggage for a travelling film crew. So to transport seven team members from coast to coast required a support vehicle equipped to handle, comfortably, the road to Bio's most precious resource. But what appeared to be the height of travelling comfort would prove to be lacking in one crucial aspect, which would be discovered at a most inopportune leg of the journey, and its cumbersome configuration would present a whole new set of challenges in itself. Height, width, and speed restrictions, to name but a few. Plotting the course, discovering various roads to Bio. The customers and sponsors That's Nice encountered on the road to Bio were a diverse, multidisciplinary group involved in numerous steps along the development pathway, each with a unique story on how, through triumph and adversity, innovation and failure, their individual journeys have been both defined and motivated by a desire to make the world a better place. Whether you're working with a small biotech or established pharma company, whether your focus is on chemistry or biology, the science behind the industry will at some point end up at Bio, said Nigel. He wanted to document all of the different barriers and pathways that mirror those a drug innovator goes through to complete the task of launching a commercial drug. with a non-negotiable 12 days to get from New York City to San Diego, the most direct option, and therefore most tempting, was the famous Route 66. With quite possibly millions testing out the historic Northern Route before That's Nice, there were sure to be ample service stops, eateries and accommodations along the route. But That's Nice clients and Road to Bio sponsors aren't located along the easy road, and rarely does the easy road lead to great discovery. While a jaunt from New York to California across Route 66 would have replicated Nigel's 1992 effort, the scope of the journey had evolved considerably since then, and so must the course. Originally, we wanted to take the most picturesque route, which we thought was Route 66, explained Nigel. But we realised our client base is not located along that route, so we decided to instead go down the East Coast and pick up the Southern route. This would allow us to see the most customers in our time frame of 12 days. New York, despite all of its industry, is not known to be a city particularly rich in biotechnology. So it was decided early on that Cambridge, Massachusetts, one of the world's largest biotech hubs, would be the starting gate for the journey towards Bio 2017. Pay the naysayers no mind. Steadfast on the road to Bio. There are few sentiments that bother Nigel Walker more than those indicating something, particularly something he devised, simply cannot be done. This journey in itself was evidence of that. In many ways, a revisit to 1992, the last time someone told him a cross-country trek would not be possible. There were plenty of cynics making their voices heard both leading up to and on the road to Bio. Many, in their defence, were worried about Nigel and the team. With only a handful of Lamborghini dealerships across the country and only four on the road to Bio, even a minor mechanical issue or flat tyre could be extremely problematic. And if the RV failed, which seemed to be a more likely possibility, the effort would be crippled. But the crew was as prepared as they could be. Packing away four spare tyres, one spare front wheel, a low-profile jack, and plenty of spare oil and fluids, just in case something were to go awry. And if something were to happen to one of the crew, well, there were provisions in place for that as well. I was primarily concerned about someone coming down with an illness or health condition, so we did have a contingency plan in place, said Nigel. Secondly, was the Lamborghini going to make it? It's not necessarily built for driving 5,000 miles in 12 days, but we had everything we could need other than if we got two flat tyres or ran over a bag of nails. Six individuals who never doubted Nigel were those who accompanied him on the road. Chalk it up to knowing him, or to having witnessed countless successes as a result of his out-of-the-box thinking. But the team's faith in Nigel could be seen from the moment the journey was put on the table, all the way through to the finish line at Bio 2017. Selecting the team. Road Warriors to Bio. While a total of 16 That's Nice employees had some hand in the execution of the road to Bio, a team of seven was selected to actually make the trek, each hailing from very different backgrounds and with skill sets spanning multiple disciplines. And though Nigel was careful to assemble the team he deemed most capable of supporting the journey from a capability standpoint, he could not have foreseen how these individuals would come together to not only carry it to the finish, but to bring out in one another the characteristics that made it a monumental success, in more ways than one. Nigel Canit Walker. That's Nice founder and managing director. Road to Bio driver. Lamborghini. 22 years at That's Nice. For Nigel, the road to Bio was in many ways a return to the epic journey he set out to complete 25 years earlier. But at this point, it was just as much a representation of the organisation he'd worked so hard to build over the past 22 years. In an industry comprised of research, data and strategy, it was important to show his clients the calibre of That's Nice as a science agency. And what better way, he thought, than with an undertaking that leverages all of the elements that come together to deliver unparalleled service. It's about the amount of effort that goes into our projects, said Nigel. The teamwork, the collaboration, and the pulling together to deliver for our clients. No other agency could have gotten this done. Wei Sulu Gao. That's Nice Account Director and Partner. Road to Bio Project Manager. 10 years at That's Nice. Account Director, Partner, and 10-year staple of That's Nice, Wei Gao joined the first leg of the journey after another account manager had dropped out at the last minute. Wei is integral to the daily operations of the firm, overseeing all client accounts while also liaising with the internal team to ensure quality execution of all initiatives. With all of the work that had to be done on the back end to accomplish the road to bio, it was decided that Wei would only be on the road for the early stage of the journey and would rejoin the road trip team across the finish line at Bio 2017. I wanted to make sure they could get into the swing of things, said Wei. If after a few days it looked like they wouldn't be able to do it, I would stay. A trusted partner at the firm, Wei was one of the first with whom Nigel conferred about the road to bio. I thought it sounded very much like something we would do, and one of those things that we're very good at, recalled Wei. And that's going into something not fully knowing what to do, but somehow making it happen. So I wasn't surprised. Brian Face Pierce. San Francisco-based Brian Pierce, a 19-year That's Nice veteran and worldly adventurer himself, had traversed the country 17 times before hitting the road to bio, having travelled by motorcycle, bus, train, hitchhiking, sports car and drive-away vehicle, but somehow never by RV, never with four co-workers and never trailing a glitter-wrapped Lamborghini. The first of the road warriors to learn of Nigel's idea, Brian could not have been more enthusiastic upon hearing the proposal. I'm always ready, said the Coast Guard veteran and master of digital capture. I wanted this to be bigger, badder, and more epic than it's ever been. We all know beautiful accidents happen, but there was a lot of design and planning work to be done. But mentally and physically, I'm always ready. Steve, X-Man, Kuhn, Farmer's Almanac Executive Content Director, Road to Bio Reporter, 2 years at That's Nice. Based in Chicago, award-winning journalist Steve Kuhn was asked to report live on the road to bio. In addition to being the campaign's on-air talent, formerly editor-in-chief of Pharmaceutical Manufacturing Magazine, a leading trade publication for the drug manufacturing industry, Steve serves as executive content editor for Farmer's Almanac, a thought leadership content community published by That's Nice. Steve was admittedly in the doghouse when Nigel called with the cross-country proposition and was, as he described, relieved to say the least. I thought Nigel was going to say something very different, he said. So I was excited when he asked. I love cars, and the trip was an opportunity, an adventure that I could not pass up. When presented with the challenge of covering 5,000 miles in 12 days, Steve had no doubt it could be done. I've been on road trips with a lot less, he quipped, like $5 in my pocket and a pack of cigarettes. Albert, the Bruin identity, Bruin. That's Nice business logistics manager. Road to bio security and driver, RV. 10 years at That's Nice. While it may sound presumptuous to say that Albert Bruin was a given when establishing the Road to Bio team, it is a designation given in earnest. Albert is the glue that holds the business together, described by Nigel as one of his most loyal employees. The Navy veteran took on the project as he does everything else, head on and with no nonsense. I packed a personal first aid kit with battle dressing, said Albert. When I travel for a 2-day trip, I bring clothes for 4 days. You don't know what's going to happen. Before hitting the road to bio, Albert had been stationed all over the world, never doubting for a second that this journey would come to fruition. Knowing Nigel, I knew he would definitely do it, said Albert. It was possible, but it was going to be very difficult. Physically, mentally, all that. Especially when we found out there were only 4 Lamborghini dealerships across the country. Govindra Bollywood Singh. That's Nice Market Research Manager. Road to Bio Scientist. 2 years at That's Nice. Govindra's original role on the Road to Bio was providing scientific insight as the crew made its way to Bio 2017. Though his responsibilities evolved considerably as the trip went on, the first student to graduate with a dual degree from City College of New York, a BS in biochemistry and MS in organic chemistry. Govindra was no stranger to overcoming challenges to achieve his goals, and this was no exception. "That's kind of the way I take on anything I deal with," said Govindra. Staying the course, seeing Govindra through endless quantitative and qualitative research projects, in-depth industry reports, and mountains of data and analysis. But when it came to travelling 5,000 miles in 12 days, logistically, it seemed like it would be very difficult to accomplish, said Govindra. It was out of the ordinary, which we're used to. But even by our standards, it was a little out there. But one thing I've learned at That's Nice is that anything can be done. Eugene Zen Show. That's Nice Project Manager. Road to Biosecurity and Logistics. 2 years at That's Nice. Eugene Show had been at That's Nice for about a year before the Road to Bio, supporting the accounts team on billing, data entry, database management, and other internal projects. Known to be a quiet presence around the office, Eugene was tasked with security, crowd control, and production support for the duration of the journey. "I thought, this is going to be a lot of work in terms of planning and process," he said. "But I definitely thought it could be done." Chapter 0, Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. Target to lead on the road to bio. "Just in case I don't come back, it was nice knowing you." Albert Bruin, security and driver, RV. New York, New York. Albert Bruin made his rounds before leaving the New York City office, stopping by the desks of those remaining at home base with a handshake and, just in case, farewell. He was off to New Jersey, where a 30-foot RV sat in a lot among its own, soon to be the last time it would be seen without its much sleeker counterpart until San Diego. After receiving a thorough briefing on how all of the systems worked, Albert took the wheel, unbeknownst to him that he was assuming his permanent position on the road to bio. As Albert headed toward Boston, where the journey would officially kick off the following morning, a gaggle of That's Nice employees stood outside the agency's Fifth Avenue headquarters, eagerly awaiting Nigel's arrival with a never-before-seen, freshly wrapped Lamborghini. It was one of those crisp mornings that New Yorkers should come to expect in early June, but that still frustrates those who've been lying in wait for warmer temperatures, seemingly since before they can remember. With the promise that Nigel was just around the bend, the team left their sweaters and jackets upstairs and huddled around waiting for a glimmer of silver to emerge from the morning gridlock. Nigel's arrival was announced by a commotion of horns and hollers before the car could even be seen, an exaggerated foreshadowing of things to come on the road to bio. Once in front of the building, a distracted Nigel loaded up the last of what he could fit in the two-seater as the That's Nice team, several passers-by, and a series of sightseeing tour bus riders took the form of paparazzi. All packed up and ready to go, Nigel and Eugene lowered themselves into the Aventador's unforgiving seats, bidding farewell as the butterfly doors came down and life before the road to bio came to a close. Their first stop, not 10 miles from the office, the Met Cloisters in Upper Manhattan, overlooking the Hudson River. "The art museum was one of the first I visited back in 1992, said Nigel. With Eugene as his co-pilot, the two discussed the road that lay before them as they headed north. For Eugene, it wasn't just his first time being one-on-one with the boss for an extended period of time. It was also his first time in the confines of a Lamborghini's rigid racing seats. The trip from New York to Boston was fun, recalled Eugene. We took some nice pictures, but was it comfortable? After 2 hours, it was not good. With Nigel and Eugene traversing the scenic route to Massachusetts, Brian and Steve were scheduled to land at JFK Airport mid-afternoon. Wei Gao was tasked with the airport pickup in Nigel's other car, an SUV, and was met upon arrival with pretty much what he expected. An outwardly enthusiastic Steve and a quieter but equally motivated Brian. I was thinking to myself, these guys have no idea what they just got themselves into, said Wei. Just over the Connecticut state line, on the way to Boston, it started to sink in that, despite the confidence and enthusiasm they exuded, everyone in the SUV had some trepidations about the forthcoming endeavour. Steve, described by both himself and his peers as overwhelmingly positive, contemplated the road ahead with mild apprehension, but the utmost faith in his team. My confidence was a little shaky, admitted Steve, but I had the ultimate confidence in Brian, and Wei is like a general in command. We were off to a good start. Brian, an ever stoic presence at That's Nice, was focused intently on the execution of the journey, from a logistics standpoint, and on the quality of the product he would be delivering. But with Wei at the wheel, his anxieties were put to rest. It was great to have Wei the first couple of days, said Brian. As a manager of teams, he's just fantastic. Nigel and Eugene, as they should have been, were the first to accelerate into the greater Boston area of Massachusetts, the campaign's inaugural region and ultimate representation of the road to bio. Cambridge, a city that has been ripe with industry since its pivotal role in the 17th century American history, has progressively evolved into the biotechnology hub it is today, with the formation of the city's two major research universities serving as contributory factors. The Massachusetts Biotechnology Council, MassBio, which for 30 years has provided services and support for some of the world's leading life sciences organizations, today represents over 975 biotech organizations in Massachusetts and beyond. Cambridge-based Brammer Bio, a new cell and gene therapy-focused CDMO, is one of these organizations, appropriately serving as the preamble to a bio-fueled 12 days on the road. After receiving a warm invitation from Steve Kasuk, founder and chief financial officer of Brammer, Nigel pulled into the organization's newly acquired Biogen facility for a proud and prosperous tour of the organization's new headquarters. After the tour, the Brammer team came out in droves to see the newly wrapped 750-horsepower Aventador. Science and horsepower. Nigel thought to himself, the journey begins. At dinner thereafter, Steve from Brammer described the organization's focus on cell and gene therapy, which is being supported by its acquisition of a viral vectors manufacturing facility in Florida. It was like talking to a proud parent of a newborn child, Nigel recalled. It is clear that Brammer is on the edge of something remarkable. Each the epitome of luxury in its own respect, the Lamborghini and RV met in the parking lot of a hotel on the outskirts of downtown Boston, where the crew would be spending their first evening on the road to bio. Moving a 30-foot RV around a small car park is no easy feat, but if anyone was up for the challenge, it was the Bruin identity himself. Like a pro, Albert parked the RV alongside the Lamborghini, and Wei in the SUV sandwiched it in from the other side. The goal on that first night, and every night thereafter, would be to keep the car hidden at night, saving its luster for the daily unveiling. Admittedly not the epitome of luxury was the hotel, situated across from a late-night bowling alley that would generate some questionable activity later that evening. But in typical form, the team took it in stride. With Nigel not having oversight of every little detail, the hotel was kind of sketchy, admitted Steve, wrote a bio reporter. But the crew was all there, and it wasn't like it was some huge deal. We had our schedule, and the big mission was starting. As the team settled in and worked to prepare for the evening and days ahead, a noticeable sense of uncertainty started to permeate the group. As Nigel astutely pointed out, the team hadn't yet settled into its respective roles, which made the first evening one of the most difficult. The first night in Massachusetts was the hardest leg of the journey because we didn't know what our established roles were, he said. Leadership was expected from me, which I'm comfortable with in the office, but outside of the office, I feel it's more of a collaborative delivery. Nigel wasn't the only one who felt the dynamic was a bit off. As Albert and Eugene worked out the evening watch schedule, Albert had to explain that neither of them would be standing outside to watch the Lamborghini as Eugene had assumed, but that they would be doing so from the comfort of the RV. There was a feeling of uncertainty, admitted Albert. This was the first time all of us would be working together as a team. We'd been to trade shows before, but those rules are totally different. There, we stick with what we do. After witnessing a parking lot drug deal with some characters from the neighbouring bowling alley, the road to Bio was put to bed, much later than it should have been for what was to be a 5 a.m. start the following morning. As the team settled in, Nigel placed his faith in Eugene, hoping both he and the Lamborghini would be there at daybreak. Boston was a little dangerous, staying right near the freeway, Eugene recalled. Chapter 1, Thursday, June 8th, 2017. Pioneers in Early Discovery. I just knew that I was going to be a road chief and a good part of the support crew, and that would mean almost anything. Steve Kuhn, reporter. Cambridge, Massachusetts. Finding themselves at the crossroad of American history and biotechnology before daybreak, Nigel and Eugene washed clean the dew that had formed on the Lamborghini, as they would do almost every morning for the next 12 days, spending a little extra effort this morning on the wheels to remove some tar specks that accumulated on the trip up from New York. With the car in shape to make its debut as the vehicle for future Road to Bio insights, Nigel picked up David Kudler, Unither Pharmaceuticals General Manager to North America, from his Boston hotel at 5:30 a.m. The two followed the sun as it rose over the Charles River to Boston Commons Park, scene of the campaign's inaugural interview. At the park, excitement and anticipation filled the morning air as the film crew worked to set the stage for what would be an important discussion with David on the single-unit dose technologies and a tone-setter for the journey that lay before them. Brian and Wei had been out until 1 a.m. the night before, scoping out the scene and were running on fumes after just 3 hours of sleep. But no one noticed, including, it seemed, Brian and Wei. We just jumped right into it, Brian said. Steve, whose industry background was primarily in print journalism, had served as reporter for Farmers Almanac TV, an online video platform, since its inception in 2016, and was excited to get into the groove as the on-air correspondent for the Road to Bio. My role had been ambiguous leading up to the journey because the frame of it was very loose, said Steve. But my journalist job started right away at Boston Commons Park, and I said, OK, this is how it's going to go. It was as action was called on Steve and David that the team realised the first mishap of the journey, a forgotten prop microphone. But with the 25-minute drive back to the hotel, there was no choice but to roll with it. The single best way to deliver. Unither Pharmaceuticals. Unither Pharmaceuticals established its North American presence in 2013, settling, as many European pioneers did, in Rochester, New York, a city whose rich manufacturing history dates back to the 18th century. A European leader in single-unit dose technologies, Unither has made it its mission to make affordable and user-friendly products that everyone in the world can use to improve their lives, revolutionising the way medicine is administered to align with the needs driven by today's ever-evolving lifestyle. People today are more mobile, said David Kudler, General Manager of North America at Unitha Pharmaceuticals. They're travelling all over the place, and so to have a unit dose that's portable, convenient and easy to use, that you can stick in your purse or coat pocket and know that you have the right medicine at the right time, is critical. Unitha is a global leader in blow-fill seal and liquid stick-pack technologies, working to meet an increase in demand for those dosage forms. According to David, up to 50% of prescribed medications are taken incorrectly, contributing to 125,000 early deaths and costing the healthcare system over $200 billion in needless medical costs annually. Two of the most critical populations, David says, are pediatric and geriatric individuals. Sometimes children aren't the easiest folks to dose, and so to have a convenient-to-open package and know that that dose is accurate every time is really important, said David. Likewise, on the geriatric side, you have a lot more self-administration, but perhaps some degradation in dexterity, mental acuity, or even eyesight. For the geriatric population, to have that easy open dose available and know that they're getting the right dose of the right medicine at the right time is really important in terms of compliance. Equal parts intellectual and engaging. David fired the starting gun of the Road to Bio with confidence and enthusiasm, which left a lasting impression on the road trip team, especially a slightly out of his element, Steve. David was excited to be doing it, and his energy was great, he said. That buoyed me up a bit and started building my confidence. Across the Fort Point Channel, the team was delighted to discover that what has historically been known as Boston's Seaport District has taken on a new distinction for its concentration of innovative businesses enhancing the local technological ecosystem. Dubbed the Seaport Innovation District in recent years, the area along the Boston Main Channel is home to a cluster of firms contributing to the city's emerging biotech climate. Among them is M&W Group, a leading global high-tech engineering and construction company, and the next stop on the road to bio. Peter Kramer, Vice President at M&W Group, is in high demand in the industry and is on the verge of a $250 million deal that will give stability to his emerging team. With everything going on at the firm's Boston headquarters, Nigel and the team were lucky to score an interview with Peter, who, at the time of the meeting, was focused heavily on managing projects at the forefront of the new pharma reality, with nanotech, bio-nano, cell therapy and industrial biotechnologies. Ensuring project success. A global operation with 6,000 employees in more than 30 countries, M&W supports clients in taking novel technologies to market through the most efficient means possible. We're working with some really new and novel science, and we're working at very different scales, said Peter. It's an exciting time in the market for me as a process architect. Ultimately, Peter says, it is M&W's responsibility to create solutions that allow organisations to bring their products to market efficiently and cost-effectively. To accomplish this, M&W employs a holistic solution that balances facility, production and equipment costs while implementing scalable designs and platforms that meet the needs of global clients, especially in terms of risk and cost. We know firsthand that we can't develop a one-off solution every time we get involved with a project, said Peter. We're really trying to take advantage of lessons learned, letting the system integrator do as much of the detail design as possible, and making that value proposition to the client that his or her project will be a combination of state-of-the-art process knowledge and systems that are available on the market today. M&W's unique position in the pharmaceutical supply chain is not unlike its physical location, which was accentuated as roughly 50 M&W staff emerged from the building to take pictures and interact with the Road to Bio crew and its signature vehicle. The organisation's Boston headquarters is situated below an overpass, giving a fishbowl effect as passers-by took photos of the commotion from the street above and consequently brought traffic to a standstill. As the crowd dispersed, a gentleman approached from the street and cleverly asked if Nigel could clean his car and have it ready for him after work, a crack that would be repeated 20 to 30 times throughout the journey. remembering he had passed the famous Laugh Boston Comedy Club just before pulling into the M&W parking lot, Nigel figured the Joker's work must not be too far away. Getting out of Boston took a few tries, which is to be expected with a traffic grid perhaps better described as a labyrinth, and a support vehicle doubling as a building on wheels. In the Lamborghini, Nigel and his co-pilot Steve had a slightly easier go, leaving time for a bit of bad behaviour as the Aventador met its closest match on the road to Bio, a black McLaren convertible. Unable to resist temptation, and knowing full well that Steve would be up for a touch of speed, Nigel accepted the challenge on behalf of his passenger. "That was my first road to Bio rule broken," said Nigel, "racing on Boston streets." Once Nigel had sufficiently expelled the need for speed from his system, and Albert had successfully steered the RV out of the city, both vehicles headed south on I-90, known as the Mass Pike, to Mass natives. It rained for about 15 minutes just outside of Boston, the first and only precipitation the crew would encounter on the entire trip. "We opened the roof at 5:30 that morning," recalled Nigel. "It would be another 2,600 miles before we drove another mile with the roof on." It was as the Mass Pike met I-84 in Connecticut that the team made its first of many memorable encounters with those who helped pave the road to Bio, the various people lining the journey. This early interaction, on the heels of the first two sponsor visits and bound for the third, was with a group of guys at a rest stop off the highway. While their rapid-fire questions and rapid-sequence photography may have told of their supercar enthusiasm, there was one sign in particular that confirmed it. "One guy was wearing a Lamborghini T-shirt," Nigel exclaimed. Waiting for the road to Bio, just off I-95 in historic Norwalk, Connecticut, was Bill Pasek, Executive Vice President and Chief Commercial Officer of Avara Pharmaceuticals, an expanding global CDMO founded by a team of industry veterans well-versed in both sides of the manufacturing process. A 25-year pharmaceutical sales and leadership veteran himself, Bill shared the importance of navigating pitfalls across the development pathway to deliver on commitments, reinforcing a lesson learned by the That's Nice crew as they approached Avara's global headquarters, that the Aventador's low-sitting frame was no match for the relatively steep incline leading to the building. The first of many compromises and lessons to come, the car was parked in a strip mall across the street and interview number 3 was underway. Taking direction from industry veterans, Avara Pharmaceuticals. Brought together by pharmaceutical industry trailblazer Timothy Tyson, Avara is comprised of a complementary team of individuals with 30-plus years of pharmaceutical industry experience, all in key leadership roles. "This brings a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience to our organisation," said Bill. "But it's not just about that knowledge and experience, or the number of years you have in the industry. It's about packaging all of that and being able to deliver on our commitments to our customers." Noting the significant and rapid change impacting the pharmaceutical industry, Bill stressed the importance of a great business partner equipped to handle the inherent complexities of drug development to achieve speed to market and ultimately provide critical therapies to patients in need. "Our commitment is to honour our commitment," said Bill. "If we can deliver on time, in full and at a fair price, we know that that's what our customers are looking for. We've been able to do that so far, and we're going to continue to do so." The wealth of knowledge shared by Bill Pasek set the road to Bio back about 60 minutes, which put the crew on Connecticut's notoriously gridlocked Merritt Parkway at rush hour. Speaking of commitments, the crew had one more to meet before day one came to a close, and Nigel himself had too, a dinner date with one of his oldest friends and influencers of the journey, and a daughter celebrating her 12th birthday at the family's Bronxville home. Falling increasingly behind schedule would soon emerge as a secondary theme of the road to Bio, as 3 interviews paled in comparison to what was to come the following day. But on this evening, the crew was intent on making it to their final destination, and with Albert at the helm, they could count on just that. I had downloaded a navigational app that is just for truckers, Albert explained. It was pretty efficient. Day one's closing engagement took place in Manhattan's West Village and was an opportunity for the entire That's Nice team to come together once more before the road to Bio left the city for good, not to return until after Bio. The setting for the fleeting reunion was Tea and Sympathy, a British restaurant serving afternoon tea and traditional British comfort food. Think bangers and mash, shepherd's pie and rhubarb crumble. A much welcome indulgence to a group who, in its haste, had managed to survive the day on gas station food and Dunkin' Donuts. As everyone noshed, Steve sat down with Sean Kavanagh-Dowsett, proprietor of Tea and Sympathy. Sean is a colourful character, an ex-model and English celebrity, and one of Nigel's first friends in New York. The two met in 1992. The year of Nigel's first cross-country attempt. Despite sitting at opposite ends of the political spectrum, Sean openly discussed issues of healthcare under the current US administration with a fully engrossed Steve, who, for the first time on the road to Bio, began to feel the pulse of what this trip represented. The different personalities the crew would encounter across America, and the dissipation of the line perceived by many to be dividing this country amid a polarising political climate. There we were, not knowing what to expect, reflected Steve. I'm starving, and we pull up to this fish and chips place, and then all of a sudden, you talk to this person, and he turns out to be one of those fascinating people of New York. Across the Hudson River, the sun was setting over Hoboken, New Jersey, as Nigel drove north. He called Brian to tell him to run over to the waterfront and capture the shot. We call that chasing unicorns, he explained. Nigel made it to Bronxville in time for birthday cake, and he and the Lamborghini spent one last precious evening at home, just half a mile from the site of the now shuttered rental car company that turned him down 25 years earlier. Chapter 2. June 9th, 2017. Day of Reckoning on the Road to Bio. We were clobbered with interviews, five in one day, all in different locations. That was the most difficult part of the trip. Albert Bruin, driver, RV. The five interview day was very tough. We tried to rush it. I didn't know if the quality of the video was any good. Five was too many. Eugene Show, security and logistics. On the second day, I sent the hard drive back to the office, and it had 270 gigs worth of capture, Brian Pierce, videography and filmography. I was spent and could hardly get my questions out. Steve, reporter. On the second day, I was worried. Wei Gao, project manager. We realised we were 5 hours behind, and we couldn't do this for the next 10 days. Having that experience on day two really made us tighten up our process. Nigel Walker, driver, Lamborghini. Sleepy Hollow, New York. With 6 months of planning and the team now embarking upon their third day on the road, it was starting to feel as if the road to Bio would never escape the Northeast, and with good reason. From Boston to Pennsylvania, this initial leg would be the most bio-heavy of the entire journey. Save, perhaps, for Bio itself. Well-rested and feeling confident, with three shoots under their belts, the crew hit the ground running for what would be a marathon day of interviews and, frankly, a logistical nightmare. But as the team would come to realise upon later reflection, day two of the road to Bio was the most important day of the entire journey. It was our busiest day of the trip, recalled Nigel. With five interviews, it was important we start on time and finish on time. With each client, the team started to take shape. As the sun rose over New York's Tappan Zee Bridge, currently under reconstruction to meet the demands of 10,000 daily commuters, the first sponsor of the day shed some light on why building bridges for customers in their development efforts is so important. And the reasons were not dissimilar from those necessitating the rebuild of the Tappan Zee. Bridging microbial demand with expanded capacity. BioVectra. Headquartered across from the famous Confederation Bridge on Prince Edward Island, Canada, is BioVectra, a three-site CDMO specialising in microbial fermentation and chemical synthesis. The choice to conduct the interview at the Tappan Zee Bridge carried meaning for a few reasons, beyond that of the obvious location parallel. Like the Tappan Zee, BioVectra's new Windsor, Nova Scotia facility is being built to meet an ever-increasing demand, in this case for microbial fermentation and complex chemistry capabilities. And construction analogies aside, building bridges for customers is an inherent part of BioVectra's business model. "We are bridge builders," said Oliver Teschnau, president of BioVectra. "Building bridges between what is needed and what is expected, we put our customers and partners first in everything we do." Describing BioVectra as more like a quarterback than a supplier, Oliver says his team is at its best when they are sitting at the table helping to create solutions and value for customers. "We have a relentless problem-solving mentality," said Oliver. "We sit down, listen, and understand exactly what it is that needs to be done to ensure our clients get exactly what they expect from the project." The day was off to a great start. Oliver, who, according to Nigel, started the morning about as calm as a father on his daughter's wedding day, turned out to be a natural in front of the camera as he discussed BioVectra's bridge-building approach. His knowledge and charisma had made for a compelling interview, and the road to Bio was on schedule as they themselves crossed the Tappan Zee Bridge, bound for New Jersey on one of those idyllic spring days of which the northeast is doled but a handful. But that would soon change as a temperate morning approached a scorching afternoon, and the Garden State took on its more apt distinction as the medicine chest of the world. This is not to suggest, of course, that the team was anything but thrilled to enter the nation's most pharma-rich state. But with four more tightly stacked meetings before them, there was no room for error. First to arrive at Envigo's Millstone, New Jersey facility by a long shot, Nigel gave the 40 to 50 Envigo staff members who came out a lesson on the specs of the Lamborghini as they related to the inspiration for the road to Bio, a relationship between system and speed that was all too familiar to a CRO that leads the market in preclinical trials. And in this instance, it was the girls of the group who knew more than a thing or two about the configuration of a V12 engine. "It was interesting to see that the female staff were the gearheads of the group," Nigel said. Time was ticking as the day began its initial descent into unsalvageable tardiness when Nigel noticed the first of his two significant wardrobe malfunctions on the road to Bio. In something out of the Three Stooges, Wei had Nigel's blue suit jacket with him in the SUV, leaving Nigel with only his black suit jacket. His pants, he realised, were blue. 45 minutes after Nigel's arrival, the Lamborghini's clumsier cousin rolled up and secured ample production space in the Envigo parking lot. But not before ploughing over the flower garden outside of the front doors. With thankfully no damage done, and Nigel having resolved his fashion faux pas with Wei's arrival shortly thereafter, the scene was quickly set and the second interview of the day was underway. Staying the course with a credible partner, Envigo. The road to Bio may have been in New Jersey, but the heavily New York-based crew encountered one of their own in Joseph Bedford. Corporate Vice President of Strategic Marketing for Envigo and native Brooklynite. In the same vein that Joseph talked about growing up Italian in Brooklyn, he proudly described Envigo's commitment to supporting its customers in enhancing lives and protecting the environment. What sets Envigo apart is a question he and his team ask both themselves and their customers in their daily interactions. Based on this feedback, Envigo continuously strives to bring new value to its customers and to promote an overall positive experience when working with the organisation. Since we're one of the largest preclinical CROs, they value our expertise, experience and global capacity to get the work done, said Joseph of Envigo's customers. What really sets us apart is our consultative approach and customer experience. We tend to offer a very personalised level of customer service and consulting when necessary on regulatory, technical and scientific matters. Perhaps the most vocally on board with the Road to Bio mission of any sponsor, Joseph thanked That's Nice for running the roadshow, acknowledging the way biotech is revolutionising medicine and the food supply in order to make the world a better, safer place to live. Bio is really the mecca of people interested in biotech, he said. We're happy to be part of it, and good luck on the rest of your journey. Inspired by Joseph's send-off and the energy of the Envigo team, it nearly went unrecognised by anyone that the day had fallen 90 minutes behind schedule. By the time Nigel reached Ebzina's Bristol, Pennsylvania facility, the site of the next interview on the road to Bio, 90 minutes had become 2 hours. He parked the Lamborghini, assuming the RV would be along shortly. As Nigel killed time, conducting his well-practiced show-and-tell with the 20 Ebzina staff members who'd come out of the labs to see the car, he began to wonder about the whereabouts of the rest of his film crew. Granted, the RV topped out at about 40% of the Lamborghini's max speed, but it wasn't like Nigel could have treated the streets of central Jersey like the Circuit de Monaco if he'd wanted to. So, where on earth were they? "Whoa, whoa, whoa!" exclaimed Steve as the RV took a wide left turn, nicking the curb in front of the True Blue Tattoo Shop in Bristol, Pennsylvania. Albert, to his credit, had held the reins of the RV from the time he picked it up in New Jersey 3 days earlier to the time of his departure in El Paso 8 days later. And while everyone was mostly just grateful not to have to manoeuvre the behemoth, it was hard not to be a tad critical, especially as willpower began to wear thin on a day that was beginning to spiral out of control. "You have to drive those things with a certain sense of spatial relationship," said Steve, recalling the moment he started to feel the heat of the afternoon. Traffic was light, but we were woefully behind schedule, and Albert hit top speed with the RV. But top speed in the RV amounted to 85 miles per hour, and, factoring in the time it took to reach that number, the vehicle's velocity was no match for the ground they needed to cover in order to save the afternoon. The crew arrived at Ebzina 60 minutes after Nigel, making the running total a full 3 hours behind schedule. The sun was going down, leaving Sven Lee, Abzena's chief business officer, with an intermittent cloud cover for the duration of the interview. Luckily, they were dealing with pros. The interview went well, but only because of the polished approach from Sven and his global marketing director, Min Park, admitted Nigel. Fueling biopharmaceutical development, Ebzina. Ebzina is an international life science services and technology group committed to the selection, development and manufacture of better biopharmaceuticals for patients. A global organisation with facilities in the US and UK, Ebzina is investing heavily in facilities, equipment and personnel to meet the rising demand for ADCs and biopharmaceuticals. And the investment is paying off. In 2016, the organisation's Bristol, Pennsylvania site was named Best CRO at the World ADC Conference. The ADC market is by some reports growing 20-40% over the next 7 years, said Sven. So there is a really good opportunity there, as well as in the CDMO market for biomanufacturing, which is not quite at capacity, but is very full. Ebzina was formed from the acquisition of 4 different global organisations, Antitope and Polytherics in the UK, Pacific GMP in San Diego, and TCRS in Bristol, Pennsylvania, where the organisation is investing in a GMP HPAPI facility, as well as a GMP bioconjugation suite. Our general business strategy includes lots of highly specialised and highly capable people that help integrate an end-to-end offering for our clients, said Sven. As we're adding GMP bioconjugation capabilities here, we're doing the same in San Diego, where we're adding large stir tank bioreactors to help facilitate our customers' ability to provide more protein that could potentially be used in bioconjugation. Wei, whom Steve deferentially referred to on night one as a general in command, had arrived at Abzina even later than those in the RV after inadvertently taking the scenic tour of the greater Princeton area of New Jersey. With the day now running almost 4 hours behind schedule, and with two more interviews to go, Wei was sent early to the next location in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, to warm up CRB's Matthew Kennedy, process specialist and senior associate, and the next interviewee on the road to bio. But when Nigel arrived to a nearly empty CRB parking lot 45 minutes later, Matthew was the only one there to greet him. Now 7:30 p.m., the CRB staff had left for the weekend, and Wei, it seemed, was on another one of his jaunts, this time around the Quaker State. By the time the full crew had arrived, they were a full 3.5 hours behind schedule. Luckily, Matthew, both a consummate professional and self-professed gearhead, gave one of the most insightful interviews of the day on making smart manufacturing decisions before hopping in the Lamborghini for a spin around CRB's gravel-lined parking lot. That was worth waiting for, Matt said, as Nigel and the crew breathed a sigh of relief. Making your facility a future facility, CRB. CRB is transforming the biotech industry, innovating high-quality bioprocess facilities that are safe, reliable, and sustainable. With their future facility concepts, CRB engineers are enabling customers to make smart manufacturing decisions in a field that is often wrought with uncertainty. To make an informed decision, companies must consider the current competitive environment, evaluate the risk of pipeline attrition, and determine whether products have different variations in patient population, said Matthew. CRB understands that investing in manufacturing capacity amid this level of uncertainty is a challenge, and has designed future facility concepts to help companies navigate the marketplace and make long-term investment decisions. Acknowledging the need to align manufacturing capacity with demand, Matt described the benefits of CRB's future facility designs, which are scalable and expandable and can be rapidly deployed and set up in various parts of the world. There are a number of ways in which the facility design itself can be operated to respond to changes in manufacturing demand. Or if new products are introduced, it can be dialed up or down in capacity within a continuous closed manufacturing setting, he said. Mercifully, less than 1 mile up the road was the fifth and final interview of the day with Christine Senft, a veteran pharmaceutical sales and marketing executive and longtime friend of Nigel and That's Nice. As the crew rolled up at 9 p.m, 4 hours later than scheduled, Christine, the epitome of professionalism and diplomacy, welcomed the team as if they were arriving for a regularly scheduled afternoon sales meeting. And while the crew may have been too spent to realise it at the time, the theme of the interview was not lost on those documenting the project back at the office, nor would it be on a more well-rested crew once this marathon day drew to a close. Driving growth through communication, transparency and agility. Christine K. Senft. No stranger to the ever-fluctuating landscape that lines the development pathway, industry veteran Christine Senft has held executive sales and marketing positions at several leading pharmaceutical organisations, including Hovion, DSM and Albemarle. And over the course of her 27-year career, she has learned a thing or two about how to balance rising demand with a shortage in capacity. According to Christine, communication is key. In these days of tight capacity, communication between yourself and the pharma client as a CDMO service is crucial, she said. From an internal standpoint, and this is so very important in today's supply and demand picture, the CDMO has to have a really robust sales and operation planning process. S&OP. This way, the commercial side of the business is in total sync with the manufacturing side of the business and also the sourcing organisation with what needs to be accomplished. While growing your international sales force is key to achieving global expansion, if the team is disjointed, the effort is done in vain. Communication again comes into play as Christine emphasised the importance of constantly communicating what the company's goals are, and how all of these individuals add to the contribution to meet the company-wide goal. It's key to make sure that everybody feels like they're part of the team, she said. This means trying to get everyone together at least a couple of times a year, and it means those people are communicating with one another, especially if they're working on a common global account. Like each of the sponsors the team had encountered on this and every day on the road to Bio, Christine's reception of a crew that, despite their best efforts, fell far short of seamless execution confirmed a hypothesis developed in the early stages of this campaign, that no one would understand overcoming roadblocks more than those who have themselves navigated the development pathway. Tardy and worn, the crew persevered to get the job done by whatever means necessary, and no one, it would be discovered, understood this sentiment more than those on the road to Bio. Ironically, it was at the end of this tumultuous leg of the journey that both Nigel and Wei felt the most confident in the abilities of the team to take this journey to the finish, and it was decided that Wei could depart as scheduled. The most important factor of success was that the individuals who started the journey became a team very quickly, said Nigel. This happened on day two. If this journey was not going to become a mess, we all had to cover each other before anyone hit the ground. It was 11:45 p.m. as Brian and Eugene packed up their equipment for the final time that day. Looking around the hotel lobby at a visibly exhausted crew, the two wearily discussed the day behind them and anxiously anticipated the road that lay ahead. Eugene, a philosophical presence on the journey, made a most eloquent assessment. "We need to leave time to make mistakes," he said. Chapter 3, Saturday, June 10th, 2017. Bristol is a good place to live. Bristol, Tennessee is a special place. Eugene Show. Security and Logistics. Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. Albert took the helm of the RV at 7 a.m. on the first weekend day of the journey. Waking with a slight shudder to the scene of the prior day's penultimate interview, the CRB parking lot. The Lamborghini had been stored there overnight, parked behind the 30-foot RV so as to shield it from the view of passers-by on the elevated Germantown Pike. Despite the fact that it was Saturday, the day was not without its tightly timed commitments, one of which, the team would soon learn, was vital to the trip moving forward. As Albert carried the team through the Delmarva Peninsula on the way to their first stop in DC, he took the opportunity to debrief with the crew on the logistical challenges they faced the day before. "I asked if there was a way, when it comes to client deliveries, that we could ease up the process," said Albert. "We delegated roles for each event to make things easier for everybody. By streamlining things, we could make the process more efficient." The next interview on the road to Bio wasn't scheduled to take place until Sunday morning, but following the debrief, an air of confidence seemed to permeate the group. For it was just as the RV crossed into the nation's capital that Eugene, despite the RV's rough handling of the terrain below, began to feel as if he and the team were on solid ground. "Once we got to Washington, D.C., it was smooth," said Eugene. "We all knew what we should do." Even the universe seemed to be in alignment amid this moment of harmony, guiding both the RV and Lamborghini to the last two parking spots in front of the Capitol building, which just so happened to accommodate the unique requirements of each vehicle. Nigel and his co-pilot Steve were first to arrive in the Lamborghini, coming into the city from the south side, which saved them 45 minutes over the RV. As the team took in the sights surrounding the Capitol grounds, Steve, in typical journalistic form, was far more interested in a different story, that of the people who surrounded him. He observed a group of tourists furiously snapping pictures of what he initially assumed was the White House, but after doing a double take, he realized they were photographing the glitter-wrapped Lamborghini Aventador that was parked in front of the grounds. "They just loved seeing the car," he recalled. "It was part of the excitement of their trip to the Capitol. The car excited people in a really interesting way." An earlier version of the Road to Bio itinerary had the crew meeting with James C. Greenwood, President and CEO of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, at its global headquarters before leaving DC. But after a last-minute change in plans, it was decided that San Diego would be the location of the rendezvous, with Bio 2017 serving as a most fitting backdrop. Circumnavigating the streets of DC was about as easy for the crew as was getting out of Boston's maze-like grid. But with Virginia's Lamborghini Sterling next up on the road to Bio, Nigel this time resisted the temptation to engage in a duel until after his supercar had been checked out. That, or he simply wasn't faced with the temptation. Arriving at Lamborghini Sterling in Sterling, Virginia, it was a Lamborghini owner's heaven. A fleet of the luxury sports cars lined the forecourt, with a new Aventador V12S on proud display. Out came Leonardo from Lamborghini Corporate, and Jason, the service manager of the Sterling Service Department. "I had never felt so welcomed upon arriving at a dealership," said Nigel. Leonardo had arranged for a service that Nigel and the crew assumed would include nothing more than a quick top-off of the fluids and a pressure check on the tyres. But as the look on Jason's face told of increasing concern, it became clear that this was a little more serious than anticipated. Reporting live from the service department, the Road to Bio's Steve Kuhn explained. The service was critical because all the fluids had microparticles of metal, which could have seriously compromised engine and drive life if ignored, said Steve. They changed the engine oil, gearbox and differential oil. This comprised a full service by Lamborghini standards, which is normally an 8.5-hour job, but Jason and his tech Dave got it done in just over 2, which was a new record for the dealership. This was just one of many ways the team went above and beyond on that Saturday afternoon, and the effort was not lost on the crew's most astute warrior. "They got us sandwiches at lunch," exclaimed Albert. "They let us use their employee break room. It was way above and beyond what they needed to do for a customer." After a tour of the Lamborghini Sterling workshop and an ominous warning from the staff about Virginia's notorious speed laws, some of the toughest in the country, the Road to Bio was safely back on the road, bound for Bristol, Tennessee, the twin city of Bristol, Virginia. As the convoy headed south on Virginia's I-81, they encountered a real U.S. Army convoy travelling from one base to another at a rest stop off of the highway. Nigel boldly parked the Lamborghini among the 15-truck fleet, which made it clear that Steve's journalistic interest in the people that lined the road to Bio was beginning to spread amongst the group. "We appreciated and thanked them for their service," said Nigel of the encounter. "It was really only something you could understand if you've served, which Albert has done, twice." Worth noting is that those tracking the progress of the Road to Bio and managing the logistics from New York saw the highest levels of engagement when they shared content from the military encounter, followed shortly by that of the team's visit to DC. There were 2 times on the Road to Bio when Nigel made note of the extreme beauty in the topographic landscapes. The first of which was expressed as he and Steve travelled in the Lamborghini along the Appalachian Trail and through the Blue Ridge Mountains on the way to Tennessee. "The game was over on winning landscapes in Virginia," said Nigel. "The RV team even stopped to break out the drone, just because it was so impressive." Bristol, Virginia, and Bristol, Tennessee, are divided in half by the Virginia-Tennessee state line. And while this would be the first time on the road to Bio that the crew would find themselves in multiple places at once, oddly, it would not be the last. Looking out the window at the welcome sign describing the Twin Cities as a good place to live, Eugene, in particular, got the sense that this was the kind of place where no one would hurt anyone. "Bristol, Tennessee is a really special place," said Eugene, manager of security and logistics on the road to Bio. "It's quiet, the people are not as intense, and it seemed pretty slow-paced." Despite the fact that it was Saturday, and that the next Road to Bio sponsor interview wasn't scheduled to take place until the following morning, yes, Sunday, the crew had one more commitment to meet before day three of the journey came to an end. But this commitment was with a long-time client and friend of the firm, Mary Lee Sheese, manager of marketing for UPM Pharmaceuticals. Kind, intelligent, and well-liked by everyone at That's Nice, Mary Lee greeted the Road to Bio crew with smiles, hugs, and personalised T-shirts for all. Hailed unanimously as the most accommodating customer they encountered on the journey, the impact of Mary Lee's warm reception of the slightly harried crew would have a lasting impact throughout the duration of the Road to Bio. As far as being on the road, the first person that pops into my mind is the gracious welcoming we got in Bristol, Tennessee, at Studio Brew from Mary Lee, said Brian Pierce, Director of Digital Capture. Albert recalled the scene with fondness. My favourite stop was in Bristol, Tennessee, with Mary Lee, because she went above and beyond what we expected. We got to Bristol after 2100 hours, and in that town, that is late. She met us at a pub and had actually bought us shirts. She might have bought them out of her own pocket, who knows? She spent 3 hours with us that night. We were there till way past midnight, and we had the interview with UPM's president and CEO, Jim Gregory, first thing in the morning. As the crew sat down for the first of several fine southern meals on the road to Bio, an overtly intoxicated individual approached on a motorcycle, taking interest in the Lamborghini and challenging Nigel to a winner-takes-all race through the town. The excessive alcohol and wily nature of this guy was not a good combination, said Nigel. So after Eugene went to protect the car and I photographed his license plate, we managed to move him along without any further incidents. It was Sunday morning by the time the festivities wrapped, but despite having a 9 a.m. wake-up call, the crew wasn't worried. With the location for the next interview on the Road to Bio being that where Kyle Busch became the first driver to sweep 3 NASCAR National Series races in one weekend, they were confident that the adrenaline of the morning would carry them through the interview, if not the rest of the journey. Chapter 4, Sunday, June the 11th, 2017. Bio in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Brian was changing the batteries. I was holding the sun umbrellas. Steve was swimming in his sweat. And Eugene was calm as a cucumber. Nigel Walker, driver, Lamborghini. Bristol, Tennessee. At long last, a day of rest. Rest being relative, of course. This was still the road to Bio. Even on Sunday, Nigel and Eugene woke just slightly later than usual and cleaned the car for the next sponsor visit, scheduled to take place at high noon. As the last of the moisture faded from the car's glittering exterior under an already scorching sun, a family stopped by while on their way to Dollywood, Dolly Parton's Down Home theme park, located about 100 miles southwest in Tennessee's Smoky Mountains. By then, the Road to Bio gang was all up, performing their well-rehearsed song and dance for the 3-person audience. But when Nigel offered the family's 3-year-old son the chance to sit in the car, it all became a little too much. He burst into tears, Nigel recalled. The team's first call to action was at Bristol Motor Speedway with 2 members of UPM Pharmaceuticals' executive leadership team. President and CEO James Gregory and Vice President of R&D, Ed Schultz, PhD. The track itself was closed to outlaws like Nigel and the team, but neither that nor the 90-degree heat index kept at bay an insightful discussion on flexibility in drug development and, of course, a quick go round the bend, anticipating what's around the bend. UPM Pharmaceuticals. UPM Pharmaceuticals is an independent, family-owned CDMO, offering a full range of formulation development, CGMP manufacturing, analytical methods development, and stability testing from its 450,000 square foot facility in Bristol, Tennessee. The organization specializes in oral solid dose as well as semi-solid creams and ointments. As a family-owned CDMO, UPM has a unique competitive advantage that affords its leadership the ability to make decisions quickly, without first having to navigate the formalities that are often intrinsic to a corporate bureaucracy. This, says Jim, can dramatically help a client's timeline. We are willing to take a lot more risk with certain client projects and make decisions dramatically faster than large public or corporate companies because we don't have nearly the layers of subcommittees and bureaucracy that are typically involved, said Jim. We can often make decisions in days or hours, where it might take a larger company weeks or months. Ed reinforced the organization's commitment to meeting the varying needs of its customers, leveraging its rich history in R&D to fully support customers in their development efforts. We were an R&D company for about a dozen years before we went commercial, said Ed. That history helps us to anticipate the needs of our clients and to identify gaps in their development plans that we can help with. This allows us to be very clear with our clients about what we can and can't do from the beginning all the way through their development program. The NASCAR track may have been closed, but the dragway next door was open, and the desire to speed around a circular course was satiated by a few donuts around the parking lot before hitting the strip. Born ready for the opportunity to test the limits of the Lamborghini's V12 engine, Nigel was full speed ahead before hitting an unfortunate roadblock. The track was being painted for an annual meeting the following weekend, and yet another dream of Nigel's was put on hold, surely just temporarily. Instead, the drone came out and some shots were taken of the rolling landscape that lined the streets of Bristol's neighbouring states. Sunday's professional obligations with UPM were complete and the RV was full of diesel, but that didn't mean there wasn't time for one more fuel stop before leaving Bristol, this one for a well-deserving, slightly overheated crew. The team was led by UPM's Mary Lee to Jay Frank, a Bristol staple serving what was unanimously hailed as the best prime rib anyone on the road to Bio had experienced in their lifetime. Nigel enjoyed the experience so much, in fact, that rumour has it he planted a kiss right on his key lime tartlet. Fighting the urge to nap after a hearty midday meal, the crew made what in hindsight was probably not the best decision when they agreed to a farewell beverage at the local watering hole. A six-hour drive to South Carolina was next on the itinerary, but the temptation to relax and grab just one more was hard to resist, and so they did. On the way, encountering a couple and their 10-year-old daughter, whose dream it was, she seemed to decide then and there, to own a Lamborghini when she grew up. Not bad for 10 years old, said Nigel. At the bar, a biker bar, a Kingsport, Tennessee couple in the early stages of their own road trip pulled up on their bright orange Harley-Davidson. Parked opposite the Lamborghini sitting across the way, it was a beautiful bike and wonderful juxtaposition for the road to Bio. The signature orange representing the agency behind the effort, and the futuristic silver showcasing all that would lie ahead on this journey and beyond. Day 4 of the road to Bio would be remembered with fondness by all as one of the most enjoyable of the entire journey. After a farewell cheers and goodbye embraces, the crew was back on the road, bound for South Carolina by way of the scenic Blue Ridge Parkway. It was at this point that Steve, the reporter, became Steve, the bluegrass aficionado, as he introduced those fortunate enough to be in the RV to real American music in the region it evolved. The Appalachian Mountains, where the Scots-Irish had brought their violins and folk music traditions after fleeing the British Isles for opportunity in the colonies. A brief insight into American history, courtesy of Steve Kuhn. In the Lamborghini, Nigel was less impressed with the scenery lining the Appalachian Trail than he had been driving through Virginia on the way to Tennessee. Driving through the Appalachian Mountains, this was a sleeper, said Nigel. Not in my opinion as impressive as driving through Virginia, but as Steve explained, we took the boring route. Crossing into Charleston, South Carolina, at long last, around 9:30 p.m., the hotel they were scheduled to stay at was on fire, or at least it appeared to be. A fleet of fire engines was parked outside, and dozens of guests had spilled out into the parking lot, leading the crew to the premature assumption that they'd be sleeping in the RV that night. Apparently, a light bulb or some such thing burst and set off a fire alarm, reported Steve. Anywho, we all got there and then had Buffalo Wild Wings. Chapter 5. Monday, June 12, 2017. Charleston, South Carolina. There was some real fun there with regard to the local dialect of the community. Nigel Walker, driver, Lamborghini. Charleston, South Carolina. The road to Bayou was officially in the deep south, which meant, among other things, that it was only going to get hotter from here. Back in New Jersey on the road to Bayou's day of reckoning, the crew had in its distracted haste brushed off a concern that was becoming increasingly difficult to deny. The air conditioning in the RV's main cabin was broken. With 7 days of driving through the heat of the south ahead of them, and with the last three of those days taking place under the desert sun, this was now a matter of safety over comfort. As in any matter in which the welfare of his peers was at stake, Albert took command of the situation. With just a two-hour window before the RV was due on location for the next sponsor interview, he contacted the RV rental company and headed off to get the air conditioning unit replaced. While Albert did his part to accommodate his team in a city widely regarded as America's most hospitable, the crew was greeted with a hearty dose of southern hospitality at Alchemy. The parking lot security guard, whom Brian and Nigel had met a few months prior during a photo shoot for the new Charleston site, was incredibly friendly and welcoming to the crew. "He was a superb man," records Steve, who had the opportunity to interact with the gentleman as the crew was setting up. "He was one of those guys everyone in the building knows and sees whenever they come and go." Alchemy, a That's Nice client since before AAI Pharma Services and Cambridge Major Laboratories merged to form the world-class CDMO that exists today, is rapidly expanding its parenteral manufacturing capabilities with the addition of its Charleston, South Carolina site in 2016. Today, the facility is undergoing a number of major upgrades to accommodate its continued growth. No other company encountered on the road to bio truly works from discovery through commercialization, with the exception of Alchemy. Natasha Howard, site director of the organization's Charleston facility, is responsible for the operational activities of the parenteral arm of Alchemy, which, for a company that established a facility specifically to house these capabilities, is a big job. But Natasha, sharp and poised, was generous enough to take the time to share how Alchemy's integrated offering creates value for partners, lending a much-needed perspective to the road to bio. Creating differentiated value for biotechs. Alchemy. Headquartered not too far off the road to bio, in Wilmington, North Carolina, Alchemy is a global CDMO offering development and manufacturing services from 7 sites across the globe. Its integrated approach enables each facility to leverage the capabilities of one another to create a less fragmented and, in many cases, faster pathway for products. "At Alchemy, our systems are incredibly integrated," said Natasha. "This helps with the timelines associated with batch release. Our Germantown site, for instance, can make the API, ship it to us or our colleagues in Wilmington, and then we make the actual drug product. Because we're all connected and speaking with one another, it makes the process much faster." Alchemy is continuously investing in both facilities and people, recently putting over $5 million into the Charleston facility. These investments facilitate the organization's commitment to remaining forward-looking with regard to new innovations tied to industry trends. "Alchemy is hearing the voice of the client, which is relaying the voice of the patient," said Natasha. Before the team could leave the grounds of Alchemy's impressive parenteral manufacturing facility, the Road to Bio's resident director, cameraman and pilot, Brian Pierce, broke out the drone for an aerial photo shoot. As the drone reached sufficient altitude from which to capture the building and its surrounding landscape, another aircraft was descending on Charleston with what would be a crucial component to the remainder of the journey. That's Nice market research manager and Road to Bio scientist Govindra Singh. Wide-eyed, well-rested, and well-groomed, Govindra descended on what at that point probably looked like a pretty motley crew. "I wasn't really sure what to think," said Govindra of his new surroundings. "I thought, just roll with the punches, just go with the flow." With the professional obligations of the day behind them, and a new presence to enhance the dynamic, the road to bio took Chucktown by storm. taking every opportunity to juxtapose an artifact conceivably from the future with those of generations past. After a look across the river at Fort Sumter, site of two pivotal Civil War battles, Nigel unabashedly pulled up in front of Charleston's famous Rainbow Row, where dozens were vying for photos of the cluster of coloured Georgian houses. Brian, a bit more sensitive to the wishes of the sightseers, cringed at Nigel's faux pas before realising all was in order. I could imagine these people thinking, "I don't care about your Lamborghini, I'm here to see Rainbow Row," recalled Brian with a laugh. But I was misguided, because no sooner did he lift the doors than everyone had their cameras on the Lamborghini, forgetting all about the landmark. On the way out of Charleston, there were a few more exchanges with the locals, one of which was a schooling on the pronunciation of the city during a fuel stop. Nigel, with his British accent, had successfully removed the R from his diction, but there was a certain emphasis on the first syllable that he just wasn't getting. "It's Charleston," said the native Charlestonian. "Charleston," repeated Nigel. "No, no, Charleston." "Charleston?" This went on for some time before one of the warriors indicated it was time to hit the road if they were to make it to their resting place of Atlanta, Georgia, before midnight. Now in a bit of a hurry, Nigel led the crew out of the gas station towards the highway, only to get stuck behind a horse-drawn carriage moseying along, another amusing contrast in this historic town. 5 days into the road to Bayo, and the crew had finally made their westward pivot towards their final destination of San Diego. But with the journey less than halfway complete, ample adventures and equal challenges still lay before them. Some would be significant. The air conditioning in the RV, it was discovered, could not be fixed, and so the crew was braced for a brutal 7 days on the southern route to California. Others merely required a little restraint. After repeated warnings about Atlanta's speed traps, Nigel needed to keep the accelerator in check, even when faced with another supercar on the four-lane Interstate 20. The fact that it was a Ferrari, he admitted, made it a little easier. But it was Albert who got pulled over in the middle of the night somewhere in Georgia. Prepared for the worst, it turned out it was merely a light bulb above the license plate that needed to be replaced. Everyone breathed a sigh of relief. "Then Albert crashed the RV at a gas station," cracked Nigel. Chapter 6. Tuesday, June 13th, 2017. Rediscovering the Empire State of the South. The trip was hitting a high point. We were meeting new people, interacting with a wide range of local folk, and enjoying every minute. Nigel Walker, driver, Lamborghini, Atlanta, Georgia. When journalism and public relations converge, it's typically a well-practiced tango between the two parties who, despite their best claims to the contrary, are bound together by the mutual understanding that without one, the other can't exist. Veteran journalist Steve Kuhn understands this dance well, as evidenced by his major get on the road to Bayo. Todd Scherer, the executive director of Emory University Office of Technology Transfer, securing a perfect complement to the trip in terms of both profession and personality, Steve was jazzed to speak with Todd, whom he knew from his time at Siemens. Going into it, I was very excited to meet with Todd and to see not only how smart he was and how incredibly together he was as an executive manager, but that he was also a car guy and a motorcycle guy and a Renaissance person, said Steve. Emory's Office of Technology Transfer is responsible for the intellectual property rights of the university and oversees industry contracts for the hundreds of innovations received from its world-renowned faculty. Currently, the university houses over 1,200 technologies, many of which are driving innovation in the biopharmaceutical industry. Todd, who spends his days accelerating discovery through innovation, expressed slight disappointment when he realized the interview would not actually take place while accelerating through the streets of Atlanta in the Aventador. Drug Innovation Ventures at Emory. Drive. Emory University, Office of Technology Transfer. Emory University is a leading research university, internationally recognised for its liberal arts colleges, graduate and professional schools, and comprehensive health system. With over 28,000 employees, $574 million in sponsored research awards, and 1,200 technologies, the institution plays a major role in driving innovation across the biopharmaceutical industry. As part of our active technology scouting function, we meet with researchers and clinicians to help them identify innovative ideas, making sure they are disclosed to our office, said Todd. We have several proof-of-concept funds, which are crucial for early-stage technologies, as they help us advance those technologies to a point where they are patentable and licensable. Best known for their success in the HIV drug space, with the discovery of the nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitor, emtricitabine, currently licensed to Gilead Sciences, Emory University has discovered a multitude of therapies to treat a range of diseases. It's hard to compete with the impact our success in the HIV drug space has had on society, but we are also incredibly proud of our numerous other innovations, ranging from the recently approved imaging technology to detect recurrent prostate cancer, to a device to deliver magnetic stimulation to treat depression, to a portable telescoping mosquito catcher that has sold all over the world at cost to help monitor the spread of insects and disease, said Todd. While Brian, Steve, and Eugene took care of business with Todd, Nigel assumed his position as showman, presenting the road to bio and the vehicle behind the effort to Emory's staff. Catching wind of Todd's proclivity for speed, Nigel made sure he was promptly outside the building once the interview was over to take Todd for a spin around the neighbourhood. But as Nigel dropped the hammer, pulling out of the university, he caught a stomach-dropping glimpse in the rearview mirror. A police car pulling out behind him, hitting the brakes and maintaining a modest 30 miles per hour as the cop tailed him for the duration of the joyride, he managed to dodge a run-in this time, though he would not get out of A-Town completely scot-free. Approximately 6 miles southwest of Emory in Atlanta was the CNN World Headquarters, an opportunity the Road to Bio newsies simply could not resist. Strangely, Steve, the crew's main correspondent, was missing in action on this most important stop-off. Apparently, lending his charisma to the 200-plus Rotarians attending the Rotary International Convention over at the nearby Omni Hotel. It was as Nigel waited in front of the building in the Lamborghini, unknowingly straddling a double yellow line, that he encountered what he was sure was his first real run-in with the law on the road to Bio. But as an officer of the Atlanta Police Department approached, the crew, it seemed, was stifling giggles. "Little did I know the officer had been asked by Brian and Govindra to move me along," said Nigel. A few minutes into the conversation, she got into the passenger seat and we talked about the Atlanta Police and how much she loved the job. What Brian and Govindra intended as a prank turned out to be yet another one of the enriching interactions that comprised the spirit of the journey. After a bit of a goof, including a mock arrest and several amusing photo ops, the crew bid farewell to their newest contributor to the Road to Bio, and to the Peach State. Due west by way of Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, the crew knew little of what they were in for, but one thing they did know was that barbecue was in their future. Conveniently, Leeds, Alabama, the next stopping point on the Road to Bio, was home to two things of particular interest to a group of motor and food enthusiasts. The Barber Vintage Motorsports Museum at the Barber Motorsports Park and the award-winning Rusty's Barbecue. Traffic surrounding the museum was fairly quiet on a Tuesday afternoon, but Brian couldn't leave it at that, drawing the attention of two security guards as he climbed on top of the RV in the parking lot. Nigel quickly mediated the situation, offering passes all around to the largest motorcycle museum in the US, where Brian Pierce found himself alongside a 1913 Pierce 4, the first four-cylinder motorcycle produced in the US. "Like two old men," noted Nigel, never missing an opportunity. Trading wisecracks had become something of a rite of passage on the Road to Bio, with those flying under the radar of whose expense they were at earning extra points. Sitting at Rusty's barbecue over a wealth of slow-smoked meats, Brian shared one of these very incidents, which, unbeknownst to Nigel or the group, had occurred just hours earlier. Brian had been taking some footage of Nigel outside of CNN, which ended with Nigel speeding away from the building. As had become a typical occurrence, Nigel's rubber-burning departure in his glitter-wrapped Aventador had sparked some questions about the identity of the character. "I had to laugh because, of course, it was Nigel," said Brian. "But I told them it was Nigella Trump, Donald Trump's daughter they kept under the radar, but who runs the whole operation." Everyone laughed, though it remains unclear whether Brian's quip was just that funny or delirium had begun to impact the lucidity of the table. As a long-famished crew found themselves quite literally submerged in a sea of barbecue sauce, mac and cheese, and the best ribs Steve Kuhn claims to have had in his life. Full-bellied and heavy-eyed, the crew made a late-day push to Jackson, Mississippi, where they would hang their hats that evening. But crossing the city line, they were greeted with a welcome that was less than warm and downright ominous.
"I'm not going to rob you, but I suggest you get out of here."
Chapter 7, Wednesday, June 14th, 2017. Hit the road, Jackson. "Wherever we go, we heat up the place pretty quick." Albert Bruin, security and driver, RV. Jackson, Mississippi. The characteristically thick Mississippi air was particularly so this morning, infused with a sense of unrest that seemed to permeate the group following the previous evening's encounter. As Nigel and Eugene washed the car a bit more hurriedly than usual on a day with no sponsor visits, the two debated whether last night's greeting came from a well-meaning citizen or someone with crueler intentions. Upon arriving in Jackson the night before, Steve and Nigel hit the downtown area for a few snaps of the town hall, a must in a city as rich in history as this one. As the two captured their surroundings, it became eerily evident that someone else was capturing theirs, when an SUV pulled up alongside the Lamborghini and heeded a most unnerving warning.
"I'm not going to rob you," said the driver of the SUV, a heavyset man with a booming voice, "but you need to leave. You're in a dangerous neighbourhood, and I suggest you get out of here."
With certainly no need to tell them twice, Nigel and Steve hit the road for the hotel. At this point, they figured the guy in the SUV probably meant well, and, as Nigel would claim, testing the limits of the Lamborghini's accelerator down Route 20 was merely a precaution. But what happened next was what sparked the early morning debate around the car wash. 5 to 7 miles down the road, the same SUV turned up.
"That was that," said Nigel. "We were off like a dirty shirt."
With the next sponsor visit not scheduled to take place until the following day, the plan was to hit the Vicksburg National Military Park, a bit of a surprise for Navy veteran Albert Bruin. Steve wanted to pick up some supplies before hitting the road, so the crew decided to pop into the local Walmart before leaving Jackson. As was to be expected, a large group circled the car with all sorts of questions. But with the sense of unease lingering from the night before, this usually happy occasion was tainted with tension. Then came a warning. "People were telling us it wasn't safe there," said road to bioscientist Govindra Singh. It was a weird contrast, the fact that the community wasn't safe, but the community was telling us it wasn't safe. To hear Nigel tell it, Steve ran into Walmart exclaiming that the police had turned up and that the crew needed to leave Jackson at once. Local gangs had been alerted that there was a Lamborghini in town, and their property was at risk of being jacked. Whether this was an accurate portrayal or dramatic retelling, it was best that the crew move on. And move on, fast. An hour west on the now familiar I-20 was Vicksburg, Mississippi, site of the pivotal siege of Vicksburg during the Civil War. Turns out, Albert had earned himself a lifelong pass to national parks and recreational lands with his earlier service, and the crew had fortuitously earned one by association. "I smuggled in the people in the back of the RV," Albert beamed. Between the military veteran in Albert and Civil War buff in Steve, there were at least two enthralled parties aboard the road to Bio,
and that number would jump to 7 by the end of this visit. For Nigel, it was the cannons overlooking the ridge and the rolling hills where thousands of young men had died in battle that stuck. Marking the historical relevance of the Civil War, and this monumental battle in particular, Steve, who had been left at the entrance while he conducted an hour-long conference call, turned up about 3 hours later after getting lost in the history of the hallowed grounds. The 375-mile drive to Irving, Texas, that night's Road to Bio resting place and location of the next day's first of two sponsor interviews, was cut in half with a stop for some fried shrimp and catfish at Sam's Southern Eatery in Shreveport, Louisiana. Albert was a bit sceptical upon inspection of the establishment's questionable exterior, but quickly got over his trepidations once he took a bite. "It did not look good," recalled Albert. "But oh my God, they're catfish and shrimp. I ordered a basket as opposed to a plate. She doubled it and threw a mountain of fries on top. I was stupid enough to finish them all." Fortunately for Albert and his admittedly self-induced food coma, the crossover into Texas brought with it the state's generous 85-mile-per-hour highway speed limit. Top speed for the RV. Albert gunned it the rest of the way to Irving, still, of course, lagging behind Nigel and Steve in the Lamborghini. But they must not have been that far behind, as evidenced by the reaction of the gas station attendant when they stopped at one of the very few fuel stops they encountered on I-20. Brian captured it best. "We walked in and the cashier was on the phone saying, 'You wouldn't believe it, a silver Lamborghini.' And we said, 'Yeah, we know that guy.'" Chapter 8, Thursday, June 15th, 2017. Putting Bio back in the Road to Bio. We all had to help out. He was getting noticeably frustrated and burnt out. Govindra Singh, scientist, Irving, Texas. At long last, the Road to Bio was back on the Road to Bio. With their last sponsor visit 2 days prior in Atlanta, the boys were eager to dive back into the science and innovation that inspired this whole scavenger hunt. And with global technology and specialty materials company Celanese first at bat, only 400 yards from the hotel, they certainly didn't have to look far, or so they thought. Albert took a few wrong turns, and it was a 15-minute drive, explained Steve. Albert, it should be noted, had been fending off backseat drivers since before Steve's outcry during that wide left turn back in Princeton, New Jersey. Now 8 days in, with only 2 more to go for Albert before his departure in El Paso, he had had just about enough. "I had a bunch of backseat drivers," said Albert. "I missed a few stops on purpose." Their time at Celanese would get off to a rocky start, though Albert's navigation was not to blame for this. The building security seemed uncomfortable from the moment they arrived, and after 30 minutes of setting up, the team was asked to leave the building and shoot outdoors. This was no issue for the agile crew and their quick-thinking subject, but by the third time, it began to impact the flow of the shoot, and Steve, the reporter, was taking the brunt of it. "The security guard stopped us right in the middle of our first take," said Steve. "I was frustrated, but we rolled with it." As Steve struggled, Albert, Eugene and Govindra came together to figure out how they could support their comrade and get the interview on track. "We kind of had to coach him," said Govindra. "We tried to be extra positive towards him and to keep his confidence up." It's hard to say whether it was explicitly the support of the team that did it, but after 3 calls to action from 3 different locations, the interview was underway. And it was one of the best of the journey. Excipients in Biologics. Celanese. At Celanese, teams of engineers, scientists, operators and product developers are hard at work developing technologies that strive to make lives a little easier. Leveraging organizational expertise in chemistry, technology, and business, Celanese partners with customers across the entire supply chain to develop innovative solutions that meet the needs of patients. "We work with customers from the very earliest conception of their device and their delivery system all the way through the full life cycle for a range of inhalers, injectors, as well as implantable drug delivery devices made from unique polymers that we produce," said Dr. Donald Loveday, Customer Applications Director, Pharma and Medical for Celanese. We're also introducing our EVA polymers for the delivery of biologic drugs at Bio. Specific to biologics development, Celanese develops custom polymeric excipients and polymers to be used in combination medical devices, overcoming bioavailability challenges by combining innovative drug delivery technologies with their proprietary EVA excipients. Their vital dose EVA excipients, for instance, are blended with therapeutic agents and implanted as delivery vehicles for the controlled release of both conventional and biologic APIs. We have been promoting our EVA polymer, which is intimately mixed with a drug to provide controlled release over a long period of time, said Donald. We think this is a solution that can work with high-potency biologic APIs, which are particularly difficult to formulate. It was flat roads, big trucks, and a soaring, legal 85 miles per hour on the relatively short jaunt to College Station, home of the Texas A&M Aggies, and, more importantly to the road to Bio, G-Con Manufacturing. Steve, who has a song for every situation, provided a most apt soundtrack as the crew drove through and along to Miles and Miles of Texas, a song made famous by Asleep at the Wheel and performed on the road to Bio by Steve X-Man Kuhn. Whether the team was tolerating me or encouraging me, I'm not exactly sure, admitted Steve of his singing. But they were positive in their response. The day had hit its 93-degree peak when the crew pulled up to G-Con's manufacturing facility, and Nigel climbed out of the low-sitting Lamborghini, ripping his pants on the way up. Not to worry, Brian, chief documentarian, caught the moment on video. After quickly pulling himself together, Nigel led the team into G-Con's gloriously air-conditioned manufacturing facility, where the team was greeted at the door by Michael Katsis, Director of Business Development, and Sydney Backstrom, Executive Director of Business Management, also their two interview subjects. Back in the groove, with an eventful morning shoot under their belts, the crew was especially excited to speak with G-Con, an organisation unlike any other on the road to Bio. Most of the interviews completed thus far were based around each organisation's pivotal role in the drug life cycle. But with G-Con especially, a relatively small organisation providing a completely new innovation, the road to Bio saw a company that is exploding in size and redefining the future of biologics with flexible, scalable, single-use design, managing mobility, flexibility and risk with modular design. G-Con Manufacturing. G-Con designs, manufactures and installs prefabricated cleanroom pods, which can significantly reduce the time and costs incurred during a typical construction project. From their manufacturing facility in College Station, Michael and Sid described the benefits of the pod platform and how these autonomous structures are creating unprecedented time and cost-saving opportunities across the pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical communities. There are so many benefits to the pod platform, said Sid. One of the biggest is the time it takes to get our facilities built compared to the stick-built structures. And the scaling opportunities, you can start small and add as you grow your business. G-Con has forged a number of strategic collaborations to provide additional value to its clients, most recently partnering with Butler Manufacturing and Span Construction and Engineering for enhanced flexibility and scalability. We have a number of collaborations, including one with AES, Clean Technology, where we integrate their panels into our pods, said Michael. Recently, we have partnered with Butler and Span, and they can actually provide the buildings where the pods sit in as well. This will provide a turnkey solution for our clients. Sid's wife and son turned up halfway through the interview to join in on the fun, and the crew happily hung around after wrapping for a bit of a show and tell. At only 12 years old, Sid's son Seth was a budding entrepreneur and apparent financial phenom after winning his school's stock-picking contest. It was 5:30 p.m. when the crew left College Station for what Google Maps estimated to be a 90-minute drive to Houston. But between the slow and not-so-steady RV and a wide-eyed crew of New Yorkers finding themselves in the heart of Texas, 90 minutes became 2.5 hours. Local ranches, community junk stores, and questionable Tex-Mex were far too tempting to pass up as the team became acquainted with the Lone Star State, where they would spend the next 2 days on the road to Bayou. Chapter 9, Friday, June 16th, 2017. Southern Hospitality on the Road to Bayou. Starting off any day in the pool is okay in my book. Steve Kuhn, reporter, Houston, Texas. Scuba Steve may have been a more fitting designation for the campaign's bluegrass-singing, water-loving contributor. While the rest of the crew clung to a few extra moments of slumber before the 600-mile road to Bayou Day 9, Steve hit the pool for a few laps, a brisk warm-up for what was to be a long, long haul through Texas. Eugene, in particular, enjoyed the extra shut-eye, as Day 9 was the only day he and Nigel would forgo their daily ritual of cleaning the car. The Aventador, which had been parked at Lamborghini Houston the night before, was due for a final once-over and fluid check before reaching its final destination of San Diego. But unlike the critical tune-up back in Sterling, Virginia, there was very little to do, and the team was back on the road within 20 minutes. The day that lay before them was not unlike the stretch of Highway 10 that would lead them out of the Lone Star State. Long, open, and at times a bit dodgy. But before resigning themselves to the flatness of the desert roads, a splash of vivacity was necessary, which was more than satisfied by Houston's vibrant scene. Noticing a sampling of the city's signature graffiti on the walls of the Lamborghini dealership, Nigel, an artist at his core with a love for bold colours, was quick to identify where the best representation of Houston's graffiti art could be found. Downtown Houston is a beautiful area where graffiti artists are given large canvases to express their visual, Nigel noted. As the team headed downtown for a photo op, so did throngs of others, both fellow passers-through and native Houstonians alike. In line with the encounters made on the journey thus far, Houston did not disappoint in terms of personality. In just the area surrounding where the car was parked, there were models taking headshots, a family taking graduation pictures, and a yoga instructor mother on vacation with her soccer-playing son. Between the photos and conversation, 2 hours had passed in the baking sun before it occurred to anyone that perhaps they should have worn sunscreen. What in theory sounds like a quick jaunt across county lines is never so in Texas, as was first evidenced on the road to Bayou by the 4.5-hour trek to the Alamo in San Antonio. And if the team thought Houston's graffiti murals drew a crowd, they didn't know what they were in for at this tourist hotspot. While Brian set up across from the Alamo, Nigel and Steve took a drive-by approach, circling the landmark until they captured the perfect shot. Back on Highway 10, the miles and miles of Texas Steve so animatedly sang about the day prior were multiplying as the landscape began its slow shift from verdant pastures to arid desert. The Garvin store in Mountain Home, one of the oldest remaining convenience stores in Texas, and a staple for those roaming the off-beaten path in central Texas, was a must on the road to Bayou. History aside, the Garvin store promises legendary brisket and barbecue, and welcomes those in need of meat, a treat, or a place to rest your feet. All of the above for the boys on the road to Bayou. But Nigel and Steve, who'd been keeping pace at the usual 45 minutes ahead of the RV, arrived to an empty storefront, almost 200 miles off course, with dusk now looming and the RV nowhere in sight. It wasn't quite time to panic, though things weren't looking great. There was no cell service, so calling the RV was a waste of time, said Nigel. But a fortuitous turn of events ended up making the 3-hour detour well worth it, though for reasons very different from those anticipated initially. As Nigel and Steve stood around, wondering what to do next, a group of locals pulled into the empty parking lot and approached the city dwellers with an offer they couldn't refuse.
"You guys look lost,"
said the first to approach, a man in a cowboy hat. "And hungry. Would you like to join me for a cookout?" A few miles back, the RV crew had already spotted a hint of civilization amid a cloud of billowing smoke. Taking in the undeniable aroma of a Texas barbecue, the crew, led by Albert, had already made up their minds that this would be the next stop on the road to Bio. "I was like, I would really, really love to crash that barbecue," said Albert, unaware at this point that the Garvin store was closed. "Not long after, we saw Nigel coming back, and I said, 'Hey, forget the Garvin store, that's where we're going.'" The cookout, the crew learned, was a fundraiser for the Divide Volunteer Fire Department, one of the most generous, welcoming groups the team would encounter on the road to Bio. And according to Albert, the steaks weren't half bad either. "I'm telling you, it was one of the best steaks I've ever had for $15, said Albert. "You're not going to find a steak like that for $15 in New York City." While the crew largely hailed from New York City, with the exception of San Francisco-based Brian Pierce and Chicago native Steve Kuhn, the majority were born elsewhere, some overseas. Perhaps this was why so many on the road to Bio were continuously enthralled with the different people and cultures they encountered on the trip. Here, in the heart of Texas, they were immersed in a culture that was quite a contrast to that of New York, largely in terms of hospitality. Though there were other differences too. "There was a woman walking around with a gun in one hand and bullets in the other," recalled Govindra Singh, the Road to Bio's Queens, New York-based scientist. "It was definitely an eye-opener for me." Brian, who has lived on both the east and west coasts of the US and traversed nearly every state in between, had never come across, or captured for that matter, a more unique, welcoming group. "They were auctioning off machine guns, which was culturally a little bit different than what I'm used to," said Brian. "But it was the nicest and most welcoming group of people." As Brian and the team scrambled to capture the spirit of the evening before devouring at least their culinary representations of it, Albert, the ever-astute tin can sailor, felt eyes on the crew. A quick survey of the scene confirmed his suspicion. But it wasn't their lack of cowboy hats or unconventional vehicle that was causing the stares, as they had assumed. At least, not entirely. "People were laughing at us," exclaimed Albert. "Turns out we were the only ones with phones. There's no service, so they use landlines." The road to Bio was made to feel so at home in Mountain Home that it was difficult to leave, which would explain the 9:30 p.m. departure, with over 250 miles still to go that night. Fortunately for Nigel, big rigs were pretty much the only thing lining the late-night Texas roads, with no highway patrol in sight. Let's just say the 85-mile-per-hour speed limit was at 3,000 rpm, and we were at 5,000 rpm, Nigel discreetly shared. Indiscretion aside, it could be argued that this marginal breach of regulation was actually a safeguard. For not the radio at its highest volume, nor the hair-raising wind entering through the Aventador's open windows, could keep the exhaustion at bay for Nigel, or his co-pilot Steve, who had by then succumbed to its grasp. After 14 hours of driving, speed would prove to be the only adequate stimulant for the thrill-seeking speedster, though he was careful to keep it within reason. Completing the haul in a swift 3 hours, Nigel crossed into Fort Stockton, the finish line of the 598-mile day 9, at 1 a.m. "The RV turned up around 45 minutes later," said Nigel. "The usual deal." Chapter 10, Saturday, June 17th, 2017. Farewell, Albert. "It was fun, but I didn't want to be doing this forever." Albert Bruin, security and driver, RV. Fort Stockton, Texas. Day 10 on the road to Bio was an especially challenging one. This makes sense. It was, after all, the perfect storm for a collective breakdown. Brutal desert heat, an inevitably exhausted and malnourished crew, and a lack of adequate fuel in rural Texas were all contributory factors.
But in each retelling of this day that would unofficially mark the start of the journey's final stretch, one factor seemed to amplify the strife. Albert Bruin was departing. "We were really tight by then, and he's a very self-sacrificing person," said Steve. Another challenge that would prove to be especially taxing was the 600 miles of ground the crew needed to cover in order to make it to their next sponsor visit in Tucson, Arizona. First thing the following morning. As tensions grew high under an intensifying Texas sun, and inhibitions began to dissolve as rapidly as a desert mirage, they would get there because they had to, but not without some tension, and not without a few strange encounters along the way. Stop one on day 10 was El Paso International Airport, a 3.5-hour drive from Fort Stockton, where Albert would be bid farewell and another Road to Bio team member would be collected. Understandably, the crew was sad to see Albert go, as he was key in quite literally driving the journey forward. Govindra, among others, attempted to dissuade him from leaving, but there was no way Albert was missing that flight. "I said, 'Hey, Albert, it's okay if you miss your flight. You get to spend another day with us.'" Govindra recalled. He said, "I'm not missing that flight for anything." The last of the 93-octane fuel the crew had stocked up on back in Charleston, South Carolina, had by now dried up, and despite calls to 6 gas stations, there was none to be found within the 600-mile radius the crew would traverse that day. Recalling warnings from various service personnel not to fill the Aventador with anything but 93-octane, Nigel cringed as he topped it off with 91, the only option from here on out. "There was a moment of panic," he admitted. But all seemed okay as the car was tested on the 50-mile stretch to the airport. Albert, sailing smoothly in the RV thanks to the copious amounts of diesel available on a route heavily traversed by tractor trailers and Chevy Silverados, still managed to arrive at the airport later than the Lamborghini for a farewell that was bittersweet for all. "I was glad to be going," said Albert. "I had fun, but I didn't want to be doing this forever. I've been stationed in Kuwait and the Philippines, but there, for some reason, I just wanted to get out." Feeling especially bittersweet was Steve. Sure, he was going to miss Albert, whom he described as an incredibly self-sacrificing presence on the road to Bio, but if his farewell seemed a touch maudlin for what the situation warranted, there may have been other factors at play. "Not to dwell, but we couldn't cool the RV, and we were heading into 115-degree heat," said Steve. In a way, Albert was getting out when the getting was good. But it wasn't just the heat that would prove trying for the usually upbeat correspondent, who, until this point, had settled in as an exclusively backseat driver. Turns out, navigating a 30-foot RV isn't as easy as it seems. "To eat some of my words," started Steve. "When I started taking over some of the driving duties, I wasn't perfect. The GPS, you stopped to do something and intended to get back on your route, then get stuck, and the fatigue of the road." While the crew lamented the loss of one warrior and readjusted to their new roles, warranted by the change in dynamic, a new member touched down as Albert took off. Haig Armaganian, CEO of Haig Barrett, a consulting partner of That's Nice. And while Haig was a most welcome presence on the journey, by day 10 of 12, he was mostly just along for the ride. "Welcome, Haig, who was hungry and looking for a meal," said Nigel. Haig was hungry and Steve was starving, as evidenced by their collective grumbling, both verbal and abdominal. "Steve was sulking under a tree," said Nigel. With the exception of the newcomer, the line between lucidity and insanity seemed to be thinning, as the notion of heat-induced psychosis began to make its way into conversation, particularly among those observing the incoming footage back at the office. A drone shot of Brian and Eugene dancing the Paso Doble was of particular concern, not so much for concerns of mental well-being, but because it started to sway the office betting pool on who would be first to break. But their next encounter, during a food stop in Deming, New Mexico, had it swinging back in the opposite direction.
Steve bought some dubious perfume from some sketchy local out of the back of a truck, Nigel disclosed. As the belly aching subsided after a down-home meal, hunger was temporarily off the table as an excuse for delirium. So Nigel's idea to take the Lamborghini off-road in the Arizona desert, and with it the RV, could maybe be attributed to the heat, but it was more likely just a result of his thrill-seeking disposition. Heading off the highway and into the mountain roads, we found a dirt track that looked promising, recalled Nigel. Jackpot! We were in 6 inches of soft sand. But 6 inches in the desert is nothing, as they would learn later that day in pursuit of a perfect Arizona sunset. As Nigel and Steve joined up with the RV, they found themselves surrounded on both sides by 12-inch dunes. Pushing through the deep sand, dust and snakes as far as they could for a view that was, well, sort of worth the struggle. We launched the drone, which was the only one to see the sunset, said Nigel. Then it was back on the road to Tucson to clean the car once again before heading off to bed. With a 4 a.m. wake-up call the next morning for an interview with early drug discovery partner Icogen, cleaning the car this evening was necessary, though no one had given it a thought other than the person who led the convoy off-road in the first place, and it seems that same person forgot to mention it on the way to the hotel, where they finally arrived around 11 p.m. after an extended encounter with a parrot named Bobby at a gas station a few miles back. There was tension, admitted Steve, but we worked through it. Besides the tumultuous 5-interview day 2 on the road to Bio, this late-night effort was perhaps the greatest example of the team coming together to get the job done. Tired, hungry, and with a lack of resources to properly wash the vehicle, everyone had to dig deep to accomplish this mission. Brian, usually behind the scenes, rolled up his sleeves to help, while Haig took over the capture duties. Everyone brought down ice buckets from their rooms to wash the Lamborghini, said Brian, recalling the moment they realised there was no hose on the property. That's when our ingenuity kicked in, and we all grabbed garbage cans and got permission to go into the kitchen in the lobby level and fill up. Though tedious, they did get the job done, and as Steve was happy to report, the car was cleaner than ever. Then we had our long-awaited dinner, he said. A chimichanga from the refrigerator in the hotel. Chapter 11, Sunday, June 18th, 2017. Bio on the horizon. What an effective leader, a combination of Yoda and Harry Truman. Steve Kuhn, reporter. Tucson, Arizona. The road to Bio was promised two things from Tucson, Arizona. A breathtaking sunrise and awe-inspiring innovation. A pre-dawn wake-up call and upcoming interview with early drug discovery partner Icogen ensured neither would be missed on the penultimate day of the journey. Setting up shop at Icogen's Tucson Innovation Center, a former Sanofi drug discovery site, it was Road to Bio newcomer Haig Armoganian who first took the mic for a discussion on management changes in the corporate environment. Once wrapped, Haig would head to the airport to complete his final leg of the journey and join the awaiting welcoming committee in San Diego. For an organization typically involved in the earliest stages of discovery, to appear in the end stages of theirs could only mean one thing for those on the road to Bio. That the painstaking effort put into the project from the start is what enabled them to come this far. Ken Wertman, PhD, Senior Vice President of Icogen, was a long-awaited presence on the journey. Praised for his scientific expertise and Icogen's progress in advancing early drug discovery through groundbreaking innovation. When we met Ken Wertman from Icogen in Arizona, we were in awe of what they were doing for medicine, said Nigel. They're very early, from target to lead, which shows it's not always about the big blockbusters. Early stage planning for end stage success. Icogen. Icogen is unique in its position on the development pathway, working with customers in the very earliest stages of drug discovery to accelerate the identification of high-quality drug candidates through advanced computation and process automation. In Tucson, Icogen's multidisciplinary scientists work in close proximity to advance early drug discovery campaigns, leveraging the organisation's vast institutional knowledge to properly set the cycle. It's essentially the clock speed of research, explained Ken. Putting everyone together into one team really accelerates the process and reduces white space in programmes, which reduces the chances of missing aha moments that occur between the disciplines. Icogen's commitment to fully integrated drug discovery extends beyond that of its multidisciplinary personnel to also include complementary capabilities across facilities. In North Carolina, Icogen's scientists work in the pharmacology and physiology of ion channels, which Ken described as one of the most challenging areas in modern biology. And at the Tucson facility, historically a fully integrated drug discovery site, Icogen staff performs a synthesis of chemistry, biology, and computation. Icogen can now offer clients everything needed from planning to building and executing discovery campaigns, from concept to candidate, said Ken. As a result, we're morphing the Icogen business plan today, which was primarily fee-for-service, into a model that now incorporates joint ventures and risk-shared programs, basically from concept to candidate across the therapeutic areas or target classes. The spirit of the group when Brian declared the interview a wrap could only be described as jubilation. Not only were they on the heels of their last commitment on the road, but Ken's insight into the intricacies of both science and industry encapsulated what this journey was all about, and for some was a reminder of why they started down this path in the first place. Ken is an amazing person, lauded Steve. This was a big lure to how my job and career transformed. I thought I was going to be a lifestyle reporter for a newspaper, and now I get to meet these incredible leaders. Turns out, when he's not leading the fight in discovering new therapeutics for patients in need, or confirming the career choices of road to bio journalists, Ken is a motorcycle enthusiast who, to Nigel's delight, more than appreciates the refinement of a V12 engine. A quick spin around the local roads, then a cloud of dust as the road to bio was headed to San Diego. Or bust. Other than the topographic landscapes they had traversed back in Virginia on the way to Tennessee, this transition from Arizona into California was for Nigel the most impressive shift in landscape he had seen from northeast to southwest. Going into Southern California from Arizona, there was so little foliage, so little greenery, he remarked. There were seemingly hand-placed rocks as we made our way towards San Diego. It was the most visually exciting part of the journey. It was 5 hours from Tucson to their resting place in Carlsbad, California. And while accelerating toward the long-awaited oasis of a seaside resort town was a great temptation, particularly for water-loving Steve, there were two more must-stops on the road to Bio. First was the Ocotillo Trading Post in the Southern California desert town of Ocotillo for a photo op and, unexpectedly, a quick run-in with the law. Navigating the different regulatory restrictions on the journey thus far had proven to be a success. With the exception of Albert's late-night warning back in Georgia, the crew had gotten off scot-free. But riding so close to the Mexican border in California's Imperial Valley, there was a new regulatory agency they hadn't yet encountered. The El Centro sector of the United States Border Patrol. Though proof of residency was a non-issue, those back at the office feared the crew's delirium-induced antics may raise some flags. But this was yet another friendly exchange on the road to Bio, representative of both national and international relations of safety and service. Bidding the officers farewell, Nigel decided to test the limits once more before concluding the travelling portion of the journey, hoping to also expel some of the stress that had built up over the last 11 days. Benny Hill was top of mind in the 114-degree heat as Nigel led the charge in what could only be interpreted as a slapstick rendition of the TV show Top Gear. We were 2 hours outside of San Diego, but were having so much fun, I'm not sure anyone was interested in leaving. It's hard to say whether everyone would have agreed with Nigel's assertion, but by this point, they were all in a euphoric state, tumbling over what Nigel described as moon-like topographic landscapes. The crew made the final push into San Diego. Civilization at last. It was almost an arrival of the caravan train coming out of the desert into population again, said Nigel. The temperature dropped 40 degrees as we hit San Diego and moved up the coast to Carlsbad, our end-of-day destination. Chapter 12, Monday, June 19th, 2017. Welcome to Bio 2017. They were all smoking. Wei Gao, project manager. Days 1, 2 and 12. San Diego, California. San Diego was abuzz with excitement as the industry descended on the Bio International Convention for 3.5 days of innovation, collaboration and discovery at the world's largest annual biotech event. On June 19, 2017, the San Diego Convention Center became the point of convergence for some 16,000 plus roads to bio, representing both distance travelled and adversity overcome to arrive at this epicenter of scientific development. Breakthrough at Bio was the theme of the 2017 convention, reflective of the breakthrough achievements and partnerships that have driven innovation among the year's largest gathering of biotechnology leaders, as well as those experienced on the group's journey from Boston to San Diego. For those who traversed the road to Bio, this was their greatest breakthrough yet. 12 days in the making for some, 25 years for others. But as in even the final phase of drug development, the journey was far from over. Not only was there plenty of post-production work to be done, in addition to the 3 laborious days at the year's largest industry convention, but today was still, technically, the road to bio, which meant there was more innovation to discover before the journey could officially be marked complete. This also meant a key daily ritual could not be forgone. Before we left for the last 40-mile drive down to San Diego, Eugene and I cleaned the car, Nigel said with a laugh. A few more warriors had jumped on the caravan for the final stretch to Bio 2017, which would culminate in an interview with Biorad before pulling into That's Nice booth 1019 for the agency's pop art-adorned Glittering Insight-themed exhibit. But the slightly inflated crew ran into a bit of a snag before the checkered flag could be waved, one that was thankfully atypical to the road to Bio, but reminiscent of that one multi-take incident at Celanese back in Irving, Texas, finding an acceptable location from which to shoot. But this was the road to Bio. By now, they had been through it all. Having anticipated that a final detour may be necessary, they employed nearly every bit of insight they had gained while on the journey to navigate this challenge with flexibility and agility. And with Biorad's seasoned global director of marketing, drug discovery and development, Stephen Blakely, as their final subject, the road to Bio was easily put back on course for smooth sailing around the final bend. Accelerating discovery to improve lives. Biorad. Life sciences research and clinical diagnostics provider Biorad has been partnering with drug discovery, development and manufacturing researchers for over 60 years to deliver customizable workflows that enable innovative solutions. We take not only innovative technologies, but we piece them together into enabling workflows, said Stephen. The drug developer who gets there fastest is going to win the race. So we are a flexible partner that helps them move that process along as quickly as possible. Core to Biorad's organisational mission is accelerating discovery to improve lives. With biopharma in particular, speed to market is of the essence, which means customers need to accelerate their timelines in all aspects. They need to fail faster, said Stephen. They need the technologies, the flexibility, partnership, and support a company like Biorad can provide. At Biorad, we're investing heavily in those types of opportunities. And that was a wrap For the last time on the road to Bayo, Nigel took the wheel of the Lamborghini, bound at a snail's pace for the That's Nice booth, where he would rejoin his fellow road warriors. Navigating the aisles of the convention amid the bustle of its inaugural day, he spotted several of the innovators who had both inspired and fueled this cross-country journey, including those he had met along the way. And with every nod to a familiar face came a reminder of the knowledge, innovation, and perseverance involved in navigating a pathway so often fraught with adversity to advance pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical discovery. Wei Gao, the Road to Bio's part-time, navigationally challenged project manager, was the one directing traffic, waving Nigel onto the AstroTurf, lining the agency's 20-foot by 20-foot booth. Wei's perspective was unique, having departed on day 2 and rejoining on day 12, which enabled him to make a most astute observation about the group he last encountered back in Plymouth Meeting, New Jersey. Everyone, with the exception of Nigel, was smoking, he laughed. And after 2 days, I started smoking as well. Wei's observation with regard to the actions of the group may have been factually correct, but any indication of angst it suggested could not have been further from the case. In fact, the team could not have been more pleased with the outcome of the journey, and were particularly impressed with Nigel's handling of it. The biggest surprise of this trip was that Nigel stepped out of the car like he'd been driving for an hour, said Brian, who had at that point captured the journey in its entirety. He wasn't physically out of sorts at all, but that was never a concern for me. He's got the stamina. Eugene, whose extent of his time in the Lamborghini concluded with that initial 4-hour jaunt from New York to Boston, was in awe of the fact that Nigel was upright after over 100 hours of driving. I'm kind of impressed with how Nigel drove the Lamborghini across the country, said Eugene. He's pretty okay at it. It's pretty tiring, and not as comfortable as you'd think. The road to Bayo was drawing to a close, marked unofficially by Nigel's emergence from the Lamborghini that had traversed 4,746 miles from east to west, and officially by his announcement that it was a wrap. But those who had come to know Nigel, whether for 12 years, 12 days, or 12 minutes, knew this wasn't necessarily the case. Because for Nigel, the end of one journey marks the start of another. And you can bet the next one will be even grander. The hardship of a journey brings innovation, he said. This sums up how That's Nice thinks. Epilogue. Around the world in 100 days. New York, New York. The official end of the Road to Bayo 2017 was called at 10 a.m. Pacific time on Monday, June 19th, as Nigel emerged from the Lamborghini onto That's Nice booth 1019. But the journey continued. Symbolically, of course, it continues to this day as the agency is staunch in its commitment to supporting the objectives of its global life sciences clients. But in a more literal and immediate sense, the Road to Bayo was revived on Wednesday, June 21st, with an interview with James C. Greenwood, President and CEO of Biotechnology Innovation Organization at the Bayo International Convention itself. Jim, as it turns out, is on his own road to Bayo, having travelled 135,390 miles as of the time of writing to spread the biotechnology message across the world. And he too has a unique vehicle for his story, a 1973 vintage Jaguar E-Type, and it's a V12 to boot. While it would be an inaccuracy to claim the road to Bayo went off without a hitch, it went as well as anyone could have hoped, and in fact exceeded the expectations of those both on the journey and facilitating it from the back end. The team came together in a way no one could have anticipated. The feedback from sponsors and the community was overwhelmingly positive, and the car came out with nothing more than a scratch. The trip went so smoothly, in fact, that it was actually what happened when something went wrong in its aftermath that showed real leadership taking place without Nigel's involvement at all. Once the journey was over, we had to get the Lamborghini back to New York, and the RV had to be driven back to New Jersey, said Nigel. The air conditioning had failed, along with some other issues, and the team's ability to adapt without any issues was impressive. I had left, and the team was able to deal with the situation seamlessly while under duress. With the exception of a stone chip on the hood of the Lamborghini, the car made it through virtually unscathed. And as Nigel continues to traverse the globe while meeting with clients and increasing the agency's footprint, he's continuously taken aback by the feedback he receives on the road to bio, both by sponsors as well as those across the pharmaceutical community who followed the journey on blogs, newsletters, e-blasts and social media. And they all seem to be asking that one question that Nigel loves to hear most. When are you going to do this again? With certainly no need to ask him twice, Nigel is on the case, circulating clips of Around the World in 80 Days and quoting Phileas Fogg around the office. But in true Nigel Walker fashion, he's taking it up a notch. Why not 100 countries in 100 days?